welcome the
recording in
members,
progress,
the department, the entities of the department, as well as the committee staff and all those that had an interest on the activities of the committee today. You are all welcomed. Without any further ado, because we have got a very long program today, I'm trying to check. Our program is very long, and I won't even waste time by making long opening remarks. I will go straight to apologies. Any apologies? Honorable members, we know my first apologies that one will always be going around trying to find network. It's quite hectic. We have to go and look at the schedules of load shedding in our area. And I know that many members are also affected by that. So that is the one issue that I know. Are there any apologies, Ari and Ayanda?
Morning, Chair. Just the following apologies. Mema Dokwe, who's unable to attend the meeting. And then Mr. Langa, who is in the meeting but requested to leave the meeting earlier, Chair. And then we've also received an apology from the Minister, who's unable to attend the meeting due to prior commitments. And then also an apology from the Deputy Minister, who's attending a hydrogen truck launch in Limpopo, Chair. Those are the apologies received, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Noted. Can you, is it possible to put the agenda?
Sorry, Chair.
Honorable Malem.
Yes, Chair. Chair, I wish to tender an apology. I will be leaving the meeting at 1 p.m. I should be back by 3. I have a doctor's appointment, unfortunately. But I will hopefully be back by 3 p.m.
All I can guarantee you, we will stick to the program of today. We will take the apology probably for joining the meeting a little bit later, the second part of the meeting. I know we have to do justice, but also people will stick to their time. I think the apology is noted. Can we then go to the agenda? We are going to deal today with NEXA. You can see the list, NEXA, NNR, and RADI. NERSA, not NERSA, go up, go down.
That's actually not the document, Chair.
Yes.
Let me open that
meeting.
Yeah.
This is one meeting.
There you go, Chair.
SAF, SADPMR, SDT. And then we will close the meeting at and adjourn the meeting at around about 16:30. Can I do something, Ari? 1, 2, 3. Let's go on the other side where we start the agenda now. Let's go to the agenda, the first part of the agenda. 4, 5, 6, 7. Then we have dealt with Mintec. Mintec, CGS, Sanedi, and Mine Health and Safety Council. It means, honorable members, in ISEN, we have got 12, if we include the department. I think this is really a very serious matter, that if we really, from a public representative responsibility point of view, were to do justice, it is very difficult that we can combine all these in such a very short space of time and we'll do justice. I don't know how to handle it. Maybe it's a discussion that we must have ourselves, separate from this process. I take the note of the fact that members have raised concerns about what the time allocation and the work that we are supposed to be doing. The entities of the department, if my calculation leaves the sub-entities, the entities that we have approximately are 11. And if you take entities like SEF, they will have another almost 5 or 6 entities within themselves. That is the huge challenge that we are having. Without any further delay, can we then allow the department led by, I've not seen the acting DG, whether by the acting DG, to take us through the entities as outlined, and then we will, when they are done, we will then have questions of clarity, and subsequently we will adjourn at 1 o'clock and reconvene at 2 o'clock. Let me hasten to say, though, in that regard, I had spoken to some of the leadership of the entities, that the fact that an entity is put far behind does not necessarily mean they must not. They must always be ready that if we do well and we finish early, we may call the entity even if it was going to be after 2 o'clock. So I had requested some of the, most of you who are at 2 o'clock, that have someone in the meeting whom will indicate to you that the committee will require them to be here. Can I then give in to the department and the entities as outlined in the agenda? Please try and stick to your time so that we don't have a backlog with regard to the time limit.
Thank you, Honourable Member Chairperson. Honourable Members, our colleagues, which is the, our DDGs, Chairpersons, Board Members, and the CEOs, and other colleagues of our management, I would like then to introduce all the entities that have been identified, as the chairperson has just said, where we will start with NEXA, NNR, and RWADI, and NERSA before lunch, and then after lunch, then we will do SADPMR, SEF, and SDT. To start off with our presentation, we will then start, we'll ask NEXA to do the first presentation. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, DDG. David Nichols, the chairperson of NEXA, and the team from NEXA here is myself, Adila Chowan, who is the chairman of the Audit and Risk Committee, Louisa Taibashi, who is the group CEO of NEXA, Precious Hawadi, who is our CFO, Thabo Talani, who is the MD of NTP, and Amesh Natta, who is the MD of Palchem. So thank you for allowing us to give the chance to present. Can I first ask if someone can put the presentation up, please, while I'm doing that? Thank you, Chairman, honourable members, members of the department and other state entities. I'd like to start with an apology. It's always good to start with apologies in these meetings. I wish to apologise for not being present when the portfolio committee visited the Nexa site about 2 weeks ago. I apologise. I had a prior engagement organised a year in advance in Mauritius, so I had a choice of cancelling my holiday or missing the meeting, and I made a mistake in not cancelling my holiday, I suppose. I apologise for that. I understand the meeting went quite well. I'm still looking for the presentation. Louisa, who's driving the presentation?
Yes, Captain, we're waiting for the rights to be given to...
Then I'll keep chattering as I go. Apologise for that. I'd just like to say a couple of words before we get into the presentation. I'd just like to say that I would comment strongly to the committee that I hope the visit to Nexa site was informative and all your questions were appropriately answered where they can be. I will comment that you will see in the presentation we've done a lot of work turning the organisation around in the last couple of years, and that's not been helped at all by COVID and all the financial problems that led to us. What is notable is that the loss for this year, which was projected at nearly 200 million rand in the last cycle we presented, is now looking to be somewhat less, last year, is looking to be somewhat less than 100 million. And in fact, the projected loss for this financial year is looking at 23 million, which is in fact a significant improvement on the target. And we are potentially from next year onwards, we should be running in a profit situation, which I think is a good turnaround and several years earlier than previously projected by the same team. I think it's also quite notable that we haven't had to call upon the department or treasury to actually provide extra funds to allow us to overcome the problems brought in by COVID-19. So the management team is doing very well. And while I'm waiting for the presentation, I'll just go through the... So the first slide that you will see when it comes up is just my introductory remarks before I hand over to the CEO. And it's noted we've approved the corporate strategy and the rationalization and the integration of the strategy, the rationalization, and with that the KPA and the KPIs based. The structure's been, we restructured and reduced the overheads of the organization in terms of essentially, although the three companies still exist as companies, a lot of their corporate activities have now been collapsed together. We are keeping track carefully of the macroeconomic environment and the policy, and we believe we're getting more agility by having a better structured organization, and particularly the newly gazetted NIP 2050 may make opportunities to the company in the going forward. With the proposed nuclear build program. That is still not in our budget as such, but its opportunities may arise. We clearly are driving to try and improve our transformation, although I think we're in a reasonably good shape now. Clearly, it's been difficult to transform when we've had a complete halt, or essentially a virtually complete halt on recruitment and budget constraints, but we are moving in that direction. And before I hand over to the CEO, I just comment, I believe Nexa has turned the corner. We've done it in a gradual, in a steady way without major shocks to the system. We've absorbed the damage that COVID-19 has done to us and the shutdown that occurred all around. And I think that we are now looking at a positive way forward. And essentially this year is the break-even year. And we should be getting back into a more comfortable situation in the years to come. So with that, I'll hand across to Louisa. Louisa, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'd like to greet the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, the members of the committee, the DG, Captain DG, the DMRE officials, our chairperson and chairpersons of the other institutions that are present today, similarly CEOs of the other institutions, as well as the colleagues that are in our fold today. For the sake of the bandwidth, I'll switch off my camera. I think at the outset in presenting the corporate plan for Nexa, it is crucial to always go back to the basics to say what actually gives us the mandate to operate. At the outset, it is the Nuclear Energy Act, which is our founding act, Nuclear Energy Act of 1999, Act 46 of 1999. And it's very clear that the view for Nexa to be established is to focus on nuclear research as well as exploit the outcomes of such a research or such research outcomes, and also collaboration with other entities for beneficial use of nuclear technology and radiation sciences. We also have the Nuclear Energy Policy of 2008, which is very clear in outlining the different institutional role players in the form of Nexa and others like NNR and the other organizations, wherein it's very clear that Nexa, in addition to research, part of the focus is related to manufacturing and engineering capability to support any nuclear program or nuclear technology that we have. We also have a couple of sustainable development goals that we link to, because we are part of the international community, as we usually do talk in the International Atomic Energy Agency, which is a sub-agency of the UN. And these goals talk to clean energy, good health, sustainable economic development, and the like. So it's always important to align to those international or global goals. We have the IRP of 2019 as well, that talks to nuclear, getting ready for nuclear energy for 2,500 megawatts. Our role as Nexa is that of being a manufacturer of components, being an engineering and a project management part of the organization, supporting any build in that regard. And obviously future operations, because we do support the likes of Eskom, Quebec, as we speak now. Then we've got the MRE strategic plan. We keep monitoring the terrain in that domain to ensure that we stay aligned to the shareholding company. And then the economic recovery for the country, that is very crucial, because as we've suffered the hardship from COVID-19, we need to make sure that we stay close to what the country aspires to do, because we are a creature of statute and we are fully owned by government. We recently have the National Infrastructure Plan 2050, which does talk about nuclear technology as part of the mix well into 2050 and beyond. And we are positioning ourselves to ensure that we play a significant role as it pertains to the nuclear terrain in the country and beyond. The next slide, please. So as part of the strategy that we have developed, we have looked at the situational analysis, and we utilized two tools that help us with this situational analysis in the form of the TESTEL and the form of the TESTEL and the SWOT, strengths, weaknesses, threats, and opportunities. And as part of the PASTEL, let's go back. As part of the PASTEL, the political aspect has looked into the issues related to the health, because part of our work, which we do, relates to the health aspect of the business. And it's important to monitor the Department of Health and drive to improve the accessibility to healthcare in all aspects, because we do produce some nuclear isotopes for medical purposes in the form of cancer treatment and cancer detection and cancer treatment. There are also other opportunities that we are looking at in the form of Kifafila, wherein we want to produce some medicines to alleviate the burden of diseases in this country. There's a need for nuclear medicine in the African continent, and also to support the RP, and also to assist in the joblessness situation in this country, make sure people are meaningfully employed. And the economical aspect, we looked at the SOCs and the scrutiny that they are facing, and the forever changing fiscal terrain and the constraints that the fiscal is facing, and our goal to try and alleviate our burden to the fiscus. And also, like I've said, the issue, the impact of COVID-19 is very important to look at, and because it looks like COVID is with us and it's going to be with us for a long time, so we need to find a way to move around that in terms of how do we continue our economic operations despite the pandemic. Also on the economic front, we're looking at beneficiation of our resources going forward and make sure that we create fortunes for South Africa as well as bringing the foreign income in various aspects. Socially, the nuclear has got a negative connotation, and that has been visible in this country and beyond. But what we need to do is to show the positive aspects of nuclear going forward, and we need to make sure that nuclear benefits humankind and that is visible. And I've spoken about the high incidence of diseases that have a large effect on the quality of life. Sorry, I hear someone talking. All right. So the burden of diseases, like I've mentioned, socially, we need to make sure that we give clear access and easy access to these medicines. And the indigenous medicine, which is used widely, and the culture can be maintained and enriched through the value addition via radiation techniques. So that is important. Technologically, the growth expertise of radioisotopes with good medical applications. We do have different isotopes that we identify every now and then to do targeted cancer detection and cancer treatment every now and then. So those technological advances are very important to move forward. The changes, the technologies, we need to make sure that our production and our manufacturing is linked to the ever-changing terrain of manufacturing processes outside, especially to the areas that we directly supply to. And the beneficiation of various materials such as uranium, zirconium, fluorspar, those are very important for us because they play a central role in the nuclear domain that we are in. Environmentally, the effects need to be mitigated in terms of like any other process. It will always have some impact, but what we need to do is to manage the impact and make sure that it's limited to the best possible extent. And also our environmental regulations are very important to make sure that we will conform to the required regulatory zones that we are limited to. And the resources, resource management and efficiency will remain important in the business as the drivers. Legally, we do have quite a couple of things that drive us in the form of PFMA, BBBE, and CGMP, and the regulatory environment as far as possible in the radiopharmaceutical SAPRA. And I think it's important that IAEA becomes part of that, even though it's not legal, it's more on the guiding principles, but as a global citizen, it's important that we conform to that. The next slide, please. And then on the SWOT analysis, very high level, I won't go into detail on that. NEXA has a name and it's got a track record in commercializing products such as molybdenum, iodine. And we also have proven our track record in the integrated management systems that we've embedded and also the compliance to the regulatory regimes that we have. In terms of the weaknesses, we need to make sure that we improve our plants, the fluorochemical plants, because it has been sub-economical, and we're looking at ways and re-strategizing on how to improve that. And we also need to make sure that the limited capacity that we have on some of our operations is improved by improving the capacity. And I think most importantly for me is the business culture that we need to improve upon. And must take it and make sure that we run as a corporate. And what we need to do then is that as the corporate plan does look into the opportunities, our opportunities are looking at growing the demand for the nuclear medicine products locally and internationally, exporting of fluorochemicals to the rest of the continent, to Asia and Latin America. And we have plans afoot to ensure that we increase that. Diversification into broader fluorochemicals portfolio. It is also important that because we have large fluorochemical reserves, fluorspar reserves, we need to leverage on those and ensure that we can benefit our country. We need to also work with and collaborate with other entities and structures in the continent to ensure that we move forward as a continent for the beneficiation and also for the benefit of to benefit from what we beneficiate. In terms of the threats, there are various threats which we are managing through our risk management framework. I will not dwell into detail on those. And we just need to stay vigilant on those because this market is a forever shifting market. And we've witnessed that during the COVID situation in 2020. The next slide, please. So as the chairperson did highlight that one of the key things that has been done was to rationalize the business because it could not continue operating in the same approach it was. We had to embark on a rationalization process. In as much as that has been discussed in the past, but really the work started going in full strength and in full zest from December 2020. And there, I think that this timeline does show that we've had a very extensive consultative process with all the key stakeholders, in that labor has been involved from all the key sessions that we had. And I think during the portfolio committee visit to our site in the last few weeks, this was very clearly visible when the labor spoke and expressed their views that they've been part of the process and they are supportive of the way we are going. We pulled our staff on board to make sure that this becomes a organization-wide versus a single person perspective to life. And we've also pulled our board. The board has been very supportive and challenging us in many aspects. And I won't go through each of the blocks, but the most important milestone is August 2021, wherein everything that we did, launching the task team, having the visioning workshops, board looking at the strategy framework, and also having all the other meetings. In August 2021, we had the board approving a revised strategy that was focused on rationalizing our business. And beyond August, we had a structure also that was approved so that we can reorganize ourselves because we found that there was a lot of duplication in many of the different areas of our business. And we had to find a structure that is optimal in driving our business forward. And we have started populating that structure for the what we call level one, which is my direct reports. And I must say that when you are here, we had two gaps in the structure and we've interviewed for those. And we're hoping that in June we'll have the twin incumbents and it will make our structure 100% fully populated at that level. And I think up to March, end of March this year, we are looking now at moving people to the requisite areas, rationalizing the business and making sure that we populate the structure appropriately and we can implement in full this. How I want to look at the rationalization process is the first phase, which was last year, was really looking at planning and strategizing. And this financial year is really a year of action, wherein all of those things that we promised in the strategy are the things that we want to make to come to reality through the corporate plan as we move forward. Thank you. The next slide, please. And as part of our strategy, because this becomes the center of everything that we do in our business, this is what I refer to as a strategy in a page, in that we have the mandate, the vision, the mission, and the values, which is really the foundational aspect of our strategy. And I think most importantly is the values. We had about 9 values in the past, and now we've distilled that into only 5, because we need values that can be articulated by everyone on site in the NEXA group, all the way from the bottom of the organization to the highest, with ease of reference. And this is most importantly around, and also create an acronym that can stick in people's minds. So we've got an acronym, EASY, which talks to excellence, accountability, safety first, integrity and innovation. And I think we've gone to quite an extent to speak to our staff, and I had a physical meeting with our staff wherein we took this to the basics on things like accountability. Before we go into the textbook description, the key issue here is around, can I be counted on to do what I'm supposed to do? Whether I'm a cleaner or I'm an engineer or I'm a physicist, can I be counted on to deliver what I ought to deliver and also to deliver it on time? So we're trying to distill this and make sure that it's clearly, people can assimilate it and can articulate it, so that as we develop our leadership and our operational approach, it is based on these values. So these values become the next way going forward. At the top of the of what we want to achieve is a financially sustainable organization with efficient
operations. Mr. Jabashe.
Yes, yes, sir.
In your time is always 5 minutes.
Oh, I thought I have an hour.
Continue.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll try to speed up there.
Okay. You know what, there's a program director to ignore what is in the program.
Okay, well noted, Chairperson. So effectively, the five pillars that we have to support that view of a financially sustainable organization with efficient operations and good governance is the financial recovery and sustainability. Followed by research and innovation, which is really the essential foundational aspects of from the Act, which is the research in nuclear technology, profitable commercial enterprises, because we've set up a few divisions or strategies to make sure that they are market facing and they draw money and revenues from the outside world in a commercially responsible way. And also the business continuity and efficiency, I think that talks for itself, but most importantly is the talent excellence and high performance culture, because we need to change our culture, build on what we have and make it even better. Supporting the operations. The next slide, please. It's frozen. Okay, so I won't go into detail on this. We've spoken about this strategy leading to a structure which is almost fully populated. And move on to the next slide. And I think going forward, what we'll be doing is our reporting on the corporate plan is based on those five pillars, which is outlined below there in line with the pillars of the house. And then we've got the KPAs that are linked to each of those, because as that is our strategy and approach of doing things, we need to do everything in line with those pillars going forward. The next slide, please. Okay, so if we look at just at high level, the financial recovery and sustainability as the first pillar. Key things there is the financial performance, and that we need to have a net profit that is moving in the right direction. So we are looking at still having a double-digit loss in 2023 financial year, the year that we are in, but turning around to positivity. And I must state that our internal challenge is to make that break even. I think with the foundation that we'll build on from the previous financial year, which is currently being audited, will provide a good foundation for us going forward. And then most importantly, and around the financial part is the audit outcomes. We are pushing, because we've had disclaimers, and what we are pushing is to have an unqualified audit opinion. And our team is hard afoot on making those happen. So such an innovation, there are the respective KPAs and KPIs. I won't go into those, but I think they're clear. But most importantly is to make sure that we go towards commercialization on most of the things that we do research. Profitable commercial enterprises, we need the net profit because that's what they are set out to achieve. The next slide. And then on business continuity and efficiency, there's operational safety aspects, the compliance, which is so crucial in our business. And we have our nuclear reactor, which is a safari of operational availability. And this is supported by the agent management program to support the operation. And then we are pushing to have a replacement of the safari in the form of the MPR, the multipurpose reactor, and we've got some key milestones for the subsequent financial years. And also there is decommissioning and decontamination program, D&D program, which is articulated through the annual plan of action, which is shared with our shareholder, and we're looking at being compliant with that as well. The next slide. And then on the high performance culture, we've got performance management, which is so crucial to driving a high performance culture, as well as the talent management and culture. And also the transformational aspects of our business are very crucial. Next slide. Sorry, go back. Thank you. I think I'd just like, Chairperson, if you can just indulge me, I'd like to give to the CFO, Ms. Hawadi, to just take us through the slides, because it is important, because this is when NEFA has been suffering. If I can give you precious just 2 minutes.
Thank you so much, CEO. Good morning, honorable members, all protocol observed. In terms of the financial objectives, there are two levers that we have been working on to turn around the organization. The main one being the revenue, and we have been hard at work to ensure that we can increase revenues, not only through what we normally get as a grant, but also diversifying our income. And I think the members can see that there is quite an increase in terms of this trajectory going forward. With the expenses, which is the second lever, we have been really concentrating on these to try and see how we can optimize the work that is being done by the current resources we have. So what we have done, and there was a question in terms of our salary bill, which was quite expensive, and what we have been doing is trying to do more with less. So we have made sure that we have been very prudent in managing our expenses and also ensuring that with the vacancies that we had, we have actually tried to minimize those and use our current resources to stretch those to do more with what we currently have. And then at the bottom, what we do see is the projections that we had previously presented to the committee. So previously, we had insisted that the turnaround would start in the financial year 2025-26. However, we have brought that forward to say that in the current financial year that we are in, which is the red bars, that we should then start seeing the break even starting to kick into effect. So while we have projected a negative 23 million for the group, we are hard at work to envisage and to ensure that we can at least bring this to break even. And with all of the various profits and work that is underway, including the work on the balance sheet rehabilitation, we are trying to, and starting to see a turnaround within the entity. And this is what the CEO has indicated has been our focus areas, especially in the past few months, to ensure that we can really start seeing the results of this turnaround. Thank you so much, CEO, and back to you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hawadi. I think just also it's important to state that we've pretty much survived by cutting the costs, but you can only cut to a certain extent. Right now, our primary focus and the work that we are doing very hard on is to increase the revenues and look at new revenue opportunities. And we're looking at multiple projects that are there. And the most important ones are, for example, the MPR, which is the continuation of Safari. We need to diversify our nuclear radioisotope products, similarly with the fluorochemicals, and also in the manufacturing aspect. We started doing some work for Quebec. We want to do more work for even other companies outside. So there are many other projects, but it's also important just to highlight that because this came as a topical issue when the members visited, and that where does Kitlapila fit into this? We are integrating, and we are moving forward to having an integrated healthcare business within NEXA. And Kitlapila forms part of the second phase of that strategy wherein we're pulling together what is currently being done by NTP radioisotopes, amalgamating that in phase one with AEC Amasham, which is one of the subsidiaries that we have, which is currently doing the housing and distribution, and dovetailing Kitlapila as part of the second phase of that strategy. So it is well within the strategy, and I think when the question came, this is how we answered it, but we'll just put a slide. Then as we move on to the stakeholder framework, we're looking at all the stakeholders in this wheel, and we're making sure that we've got a clear footprint on each of these stakeholders and understand the issues and concerns that each of the different stakeholders have. As a means of conclusion, Chairperson, if we move forward and say our corporate plan is aligned to the approved strategy, which are the strategies are approved in August and the corporate plan submitted in March, in February this year. We are very much aligned, and this plan is clearly aimed at deriving that. The key activities in the plan seek to improve and grow NEXA as it delivers on its mandate. and the shareholder compact through a strong, two strong governance. The strategic commercial and high impact projects will ensure the long-term sustainability because we are in this game for the long haul. And our five strategic pillars, which I will read again, they have got measurable targets and then anchored on strong values, which you see on the left-hand side, which is easy and will drive the performance right across the Nexa group. And these values have become the Nexa way. All our group parts or subsidiaries and divisions, they will be using these values as a foundational aspect and as a culture. And financial outlook is very positive, showing stabilization and steady move towards profitability and a stronger balance sheet into the future. With that, Chairperson, I'd like to thank you very much and I'll hand back the reins. Thank you.
Thank you, Louisa. I'll now hand that back to the acting DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we'll move now to NNR. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members, DG, fellow colleagues from SOE's chairpersons and CEOs. My name is Mzubanzi Bismarck Jobeka, and I am the CEO of the National Nuclear Regulator. I start off by conveying my chairperson's apology, who could not make it here because of other conflicting situations. And with me, I have Ms. Nonsikelelo Kote, who is our strategy executive, and also Mr. Takalo Netivazwaulu, who is the chief financial officer. Nsiki will take you through, Chair, the presentation. And at some point, she will hand over to the CFO to do the financials. If you allow, Chair Ntiki, please take the floor.
Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Chair. May I request permissions to screen? I've been disabled to share the presentation. Thank you very much. Here with the presentation from the NNR of the annual performance plan for 2022-23. And we'll start with just the highlights on the amended strategic plan. And these are the table of contents for what we'll be discussing briefly with the committee. Chairs, you know, the NNR is a creature of statute, and we just thought it worth mentioning here that we are enacted through the NNR Act 47 of 1999. When we first developed our APP for 2022-23, we went back and applied the scenario planning model of looking at different scenarios as they permeate. That is another way of doing the landscape scan or situation analysis. And we envisioned multiple alternative futures, which were plotted against two opposing factors, namely good performance of the economy versus poor performance of the economy. And these, the economic performance was juxtaposed against two probabilities, the one being the maintenance of current capacity for nuclear energy, and on the other end, it being the implementation of the Integrated Resource Plan, the IRP. The chair and the committee will recall that these are done a year in advance, this type of planning. So it was actually in 2019 when this strategic plan was crafted, such that by the time the IRP was approved, we had already plotted our scenarios, as it were. And the picture that emerged looked something like this, where we have the economy on the vertical axis, and on the horizontal axis, we have the nuclear energy. Either we maintain it on the left or on the right, we implement the approved IRP, which we know became the resultant scenario. Therefore, as the regulator, we identified that we are operating within these conditions that are prevailing. That is, we are operating in a space where the economy is performing very poorly, and yet, on the other side, there's been the implementation of the approved IRP. And when you look at that as a regulator, you are already anticipating certain things to happen, and that allows you to plan accordingly. And such things are, how would the economy, the poor performance of the economy, for instance, affect the operators or the licensed operators under our purview? Are we likely to see a lot more surrenders of licenses because companies, and especially in the mining area, are not able to continue with viable operations, which eventually became a reality once we hit COVID-19. So that is the importance of the scenario plan that we did. Therefore, the strategic plan that we then came up with identified certain outcomes based on this particular scenario. And we came up with about 12 outcomes, as you can see. Pardon me, I don't know what happened with my numbering. It's supposed to start with 1 to 6 on the left and then 7 to 12 on the right-hand side, where we are intending in the 2022-23 to provide independent radioanalytical verification capability. That is a lab of our own to process and to verify the outcomes of the environmental effluence and all the activities that come from the operators so that we can have an independent analysis. As you know, they do give us what they have done, and we then run our own analysis so that we can see if it is within regulatory limits in terms of the emissions and the radiation thereof. And the rest are stated there, Chair. In the interest of time, I'm not going to enumerate them all because you're going to be seeing them now as I go through the slides again. In terms of programs and priorities in the strategy cycle, that is from 2020 to 2025, our sites and our activity has zeroed in on these, the installation, the nuclear installation site license NISL, and we were processing the application for Thaisdon site specifically. And we looked at also the application for the long-term operation of Kubik nuclear power plant. We're also exercising regulatory oversight and having engagements with NEXA regarding the Thabana pipe store extension, as well as the proposed multipurpose reactor, which I believe is now almost in full swing. The steam generator replacement project at the nuclear power plant also is under our keen eye. In terms of what we are doing internally, we are constructing a site office in the Cape Town site office, because that is where we have some of our regulators placed to exercise with proximity the happenings and the going-ons of the nuclear power plant. So we have had to look at our office space there. We have had regulatory concerns in the strategy cycle regarding the NTT radiochemical complex, and we continue to look at that as well as the regulation of additional storage for used fuel in all our operators. If we were to zero in on what the regulator is looking at specifically at the nuclear power plant, spent fuel storage, as I have just said, the long-term operation of that plant, the reactor pressure vessel head replacement, transient interim storage facility, red waste management, and the steam generator replacement. We have had at this time public engagement and public hearings regarding the NISL, and we conducted them successfully in the first and the second quarters. The final one we held during the third quarter of 2021, that is engaging with the communities around the proposed nuclear installation site in Thaisdon. So that means the community came, interested parties came, and we held discussions and answered questions together with the necessary stakeholders to the extent that the communities found solace or at least got answers in terms of the questions that they had posed. When it comes to one of our other bigger operators, Nexa, what we are looking at is the aging management of Safari One, the application of the nuclear installation license for the GNS, Tabana Pipe Store expansion, the regulatory nuclear emergency exercise, and the exercises that we also conduct with them via the Madibe municipality, uranium residue project there, and operational safety of molybdenum, that chemical that has been stated there, Chair. I will not try to pronounce it. When it comes to NRWADI, the regulator has been having a back and forth in terms of the discussions with NRWADI, and at this stage, NRWADI has addressed some of the previous comments of the regulator, and the regulator is in engagements with NRWADI, and in this second quarter, we had already communicated with them the outcomes, the regulatory outcomes and decisions relating to the various applications they have with us. Insofar as NOM activities are concerned, this is a naturally occurring radioactive material. It includes the mines, scrapyards, and other such facilities that are not necessarily the nuclear power plant or the nuclear research reactor. So we tend to just group them under one house called the NOM. So we continue to regulate authorized facilities there. And we do note that we have had, or there has been rather, negative press that relates to mine dumps, particularly at Tudor Shaft informal settlement, Chair, some of which we have responded to, but just worth noting perhaps that we realize it is a multi-stakeholder challenge. It is not necessarily in the purview of the nuclear regulator. However, from time to time, it lands on our doorstep and we do have to engage in the best way possible. When it comes to the strategy map, these are the 12 that I spoke about earlier, the list of 12. And in the white box, it is the actual outcome. The blue boxes is just the indicator or the KPI that is going to measure as to whether we are indeed achieving that. And Chair, as you can see, the bulk of our outcomes, or at least half of them, are in the regulatory space or regulatory perspective. We are using the balanced scorecard approach here. And that is really the core business of the NNR. And in the internal business, we've got three such. And the learning perspective, we don't have necessarily an outcome, but we have a project that we are running, which is ensuring that we are able to take our different employees, when they come and they qualify, they have different qualifications, whether it is nuclear engineering, nuclear science, and different disciplines under which the regulator works. But we want them to turn them or to induct them into regulatory business so that they become regulators. And that is something that's not found in the curriculum of the other institutions. So this is a big project for us because we want to be able to train and certify our own people. And we are aligning with the necessary authorities, the SACRAs of this world, so that our program is accreditable and it is seen to be of value, Chair. And the last perspective, of course, is the financial perspective to make sure that we are still a going concern. And all of those arrows that make it seem a little bit messy just really want to indicate that there's alignment. Everything that we do is pointing towards the one big aspect of our work, which is to maintain the implementation of regulatory programs to assure effective nuclear safety. Chair, these are now the details of each of those outcomes. Just going through the one is to say that we have an outcome and we target as such according to the framework, and each quarter has got deliverables and activities, and it is against this that we then report quarterly, and it is against this that then we are audited by the Auditor General. I will not then go into such detail because this is now that strategy map broken down and taken into its granular levels. So at this juncture, Chair, I'm going to hand over to my CFO so that he can continue with the next part of the presentation, which is the financial overview. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ntiki, and good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee and the distinguished guests in attendance of the meeting. The NNR is a financially healthy and ever sound balance sheet, and we do have adequate working capital to execute the plan as presented by Ntiki just now. So in the slide that we are in now, we are just highlighting our current assets as our balance sheet stands. Maybe of importance is the extreme right gray bar, which indicates that we do have about 104 million on our cash as at the end of the financial year. So most of this money is what we have put aside to implement the project in Cape Town for construction of our office. We have broken ground there. We have handed over the construction site to the service provider. We are now forecasting that the building will in total cost about 58 million. So we do have got cash at hand to be able to execute that particular project. And the other bluish graphs indicate our receivables. We have been collecting our debtors quite convincingly, but there are some of those entities, as Ntiki has indicated earlier, that some are going through liquidations, some are restructuring their operations. So from time to time, we do have those that we are dealing with in terms of trying to collect what can be collected as and when there are liquidations or discontinuations of operations. I think you can go to the next slide. So the current slide talks about our non-current assets, which the blue line is mainly our property, plant and equipment. And Chairperson, the amount is in the main is our building in Centurion, the head office. Now this building, Chairperson, we procured it about 10 years ago as being financed. Now I can say that, Chair, by the end of next month, which is June, we'll be paying our last installment, meaning that the building will entirely belong to the regulator from henceforth. That blue line, Chairperson, on our next presentation to the Portfolio Committee reporting the results of the current financial year, which is 2023, you must expect a spike there because we'll be starting to capitalize the construction costs of the project that we are doing in Cape Town, so that that line will start to go up. It will make a 10 and start going up. Going to the next slide. From a revenue point of view, Chair, we are sitting at about 348 million as a projection. 86% of these come from our operations, which is the license fees and application fees that our applicants and our licensees pay to us annually. And then 14% of that is about the grant. Now, Chair, the 86% part, we have proposed the annual increase of the authorization fees. And our Minister of Mineral Resources and Energy has already recommended the percentage of increase, and it awaits the concurrence by the Minister of Finance, after which is going to be gazetted, and then we factor it in into our invoices. But at the present moment, we are already issuing our invoices using the previous financial year rate, and as well, and when the gazette comes, we just do a second invoicing for the adjustment fee or the adjustment rate for the financial year. So the process there is ongoing. You can go to the next slide, Ntsiki. From our expenditure point of view, our projections, Chair, as you will know that we are a zero surplus or deficit entity as a Schedule 3A, it has to match our revenue. But from a division of expenditure point of view, we spend about 68% of our budget in our compensation of employees. As you will understand, we are a service organization. So that is quite aligned to the benchmark, which is about 65 to 70% for entities like ours. And the rest of the money, or about 28%, is on our goods and services. And of course, the provisions for our depreciations for our equipment. Chair, the regulator, from a resources point of view, we are quite on a good standing. We are ready to execute the plan as presented, and we are ready to respond to all the requests that can come from our licensees, mainly our major licensees being Eskom and NERSA. We're encouraged by the presentation of NERSA. And at any stage when they come with their applications and requests for modifications, we are ready to respond with the skills in-house, and we do have got contracts in place to augment our skills as and when it becomes necessary. So Chair, just from the financial perspective, I'll end there. Thank you very much. Back to you, CEO.
Thank you very much, CFO and Ziki. Chairperson, back to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We'll move to Andrade. Thank you. We've asked Andrade to do their presentation, please. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning.
Morning, Chair. Yeah, I'm just uploading quickly the presentation. Listen, wait.
Why it seems as if Andrade is not ready?
Morning, Chairperson. Yeah. Morning, everybody. We are just there. Thank you. See, how can I produce you?
Good morning. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members of portfolio committees, acting DG, DDG, colleagues and chairpersons from NPs. I would like to apologize for Ms. Zungu, our chairperson, due to ill health, she couldn't be here. I just need to mention I have challenges here with my connection in case I get disconnected. I will see all Mr. Wilson, who will be doing a part of the presentation, and the CFO, Mr. the presentation. Just a few remarks, I just want to mention that our
good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members. My name is Alec Robinson. I will do the quick overview in terms of performance and just about Tundradi. Our forwarding role is the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute Act of 2008. And that actually translates into the establishment of and then Tundradi as a state-owned entity, as 03, a public entity. And we are responsible for discharging an institutional obligation in terms of the Energy Act. And our mandate is also underpinned by the Bill of Rights, Section 24B of our constitution. That states everyone has the right to environment that is not helpful to the health and the health being. Next one. Okay, three strategic initiatives, just a quick overview of that. The first one is a centralized interim storage facility. For the storage of the high level fish, in particular Kuburg spent fuel. And then in terms of our disused fuel sources, we just recently entered into a particular arrangement of the IEA to ensure that we manage in particularly the open sources in a safe and secure manner. Then the other initiative is to ensure that there's a smooth transition of the focus operation from NEPSA to Tundradi, as indicated by the regulator. We are on the brink of getting the final the license, hopefully within the end of this quarter. And then based on our intention to also dispose other high-level waste and intermediate-level waste, we will focus on the security upgrades on the pulpit site. For us, it's very important to build and establish cooperation and partnership with our sister entities and international organizations like us. We will ensure that the public perceptions, concerns, and expectations are adequately addressed in terms of demystifying the most associated with the disposal and management of radioactive waste. Next slide. So I will just quickly give you a brief overview. I will not focus on too much focus on our targets and so on. Our annual performance plan is informed by the National Development Plan, the medium-term strategic framework, the economy reconstruction and recovery plan, and also the sustainable development goals of 2030. Next slide. Say just a brief overview of programs. We have four programs. The program one is the administrative one, and then we have our four programs. Program two, the disposal operations, and program three of science, engineering, and technology division, and then our compliance department, which is critical if you are a licensed owner. This is for the program two, the next slide. And we can skip, yeah, we can go to the next one. Program two. I want to more focus on your program two and three. Okay, we have actually amended our strategic plan and revised it. Now the outcome indicator is 100% of the disposed packages that meet the waste disposal acceptance criteria as indicated. We also now more focused on the security upgrades to actually purpose at the end of the day classified as a national key point. And as per our act, we must publish a national radioactive waste inventory report as dictated by the board. And so that is our key new focus areas. Next slide. This is just the targets. I'm not going to dwell on the targets. Next slide. In terms of our science, engineering, and technology division, we've also revised the outcomes. And as I stated, the focus now more on expediting the centralized interim storage facility for the spent fuel of the country and other waste classes. And then we also put more focus on research and development to develop innovative solutions for all our waste management processes. Next slide. I think I can go to the next slide. And the next slide is only more about our compliance. So our compliance is non-negotiable to ensure that we operate well in the highly regulated nuclear environment and to provide confidence to the public that we operate our facilities within its licensing envelope. Next slide. These are the targets. I'm going to hand over now to the CEO for the finances. Next slide, Ben. CEO.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members and esteemed stakeholders. My name is Justin Daniel. I'm actually the CFO, and I will take you through the finance analysis and the budgets for 2022-23 to 24-25 MTF period. We can confidently indicate that Enradi is a going concern, and the revenue over the MTF will increase from 51.93 million in 22-23 to 54.25 in 24-25. And this is an increase of 4.3% over the MTF. Net revenue is made a split up of between interest of 3% and transfers or grant allocations of 97%. So the 97% from transfer payments is expected to increase from 50.3 million to 52.75 million in the outer year. Currently, these are the two streams of income for UNRWA, that is interest received and government grants. But on obtaining the Falputz nuclear installation license, UNRWA will also be able to generate revenue in the form of waste disposal fees from the radioactive waste generators, particularly in the NECSA and ESCOM, and that will be used for the purpose of the Falputz low-level waste disposal function. With regards to infrastructure projects, and these are projects over the long term, such as the CISF, we will obtain these funding from the Radioactive Waste Management Fund, wherein the fees will be raised and collected in line with the polluter pays principle. We can go to the next slide. On this slide, we are showing the expenditure mix, and the expenditure is expected to increase from 51.93 million in 22-23 to 54.25 million in 24-25. This is also aligned to the revenue budget, which results in a zero deficit budget. You will note, Chairperson and members, that the MTF budget, the compensation of employees rather contributes to 81% of the total budget, while goods and service contributes to 17% and depreciation to 2%. This picture looks a little bit disproportionate to the benchmark in terms of the split. However, we need to indicate that the Ngrandi MTF budget, our budget currently excludes the FARPUT's operations. As this fund is currently performed by Nexa and is residing with Nexa, together with the budget, which will be transferred to Ngrandi upon Ngrandi obtaining the nuclear installation license. And I will explain that disproportionality in the next slides. If we can go to slide 21, next slide. This slide shows the breakdown of the budget by program. And when looking on the budget of expenditure by program, we notice that admin, which is made up of the Office of the CEO, Strategic Planning, Board Secretariat, Internal Audit, Risk Management, IT, HR, Communications and Stakeholder Engagements, Legal Services, Finance and SEM contributes to 63% of the budget, whilst the other three programs contribute to 37% or are allocated 37% of the budget. Again, this looks disproportionate, and that is mainly because this budget excludes the FARPUT's operations, which is residing at Nexa together with the budget and the operations, which will be transferred upon Ngrandi acquiring or obtaining its license. If we move to slide 23, Chair, because of the disproportionate split on the budget between the economic classification and the budget split after adding in the FARPUT's budget, and we need to stress that this is done purely for comparative purposes, just to give the committee an idea of what our true budget would look like if we had brought operations across into the new financial year. And also for the ease of understanding, I will focus on specific slides. So this slide shows what the FARPUT standalone budget is, 34 million in year one, 36 million year two, and 37.6 million year three. And this budget is currently sitting with Nexa and not at Ngrandi. If we can then move to slide number 26. Slide 26. On this slide, we've now added our initial budget to the FARPUT's budget for comparative purposes. And you'll see that when we do add the budgets and consolidate them, the compensation of employees' budget decreases by 23%. So from what it was sitting at 81%, it would have moved to 58%, and the goods and services budget would increase by 23% from 17 to 40. So the benchmark of around 60% of the budget being allocated to compensation of employees would be achieved once we bring that component into our budget. That's in slide 26. Slide 27, again, will show how the picture would look in terms of the split by program. And then program one, which was initially 63%, having added default operations, will show us a 38% split to administration, while the business, in terms of the core programs, would be allocated 62%, and that is where most of the budget should sit in any event in core programs. So what we have highlighted here, Chair, is the comparative once we have taken over the operations and the budget from Nexa, and it does portray a better picture in terms of the allocations both by economic classification and by program. And we are optimistic that from the new year, we will be talking only of consolidated budget after obtaining the license in this financial year. If we can go to the next slide, which is, I think, the concluding remarks. The next one, please. Okay, on the concluding remarks, maybe I should indicate that the long-term sustainability of NRADI remains at risk because the funding over the MTS cycle is inadequate to cover both the operational and project-related costs. Having said that, we need to indicate that the financial sustainability is highly dependent on the expeditious finalization of the recently published draft waste management fund bill, which is based on the polluter pays principle. We also need to indicate that NRADI is hopeful that the department will reprioritize funding for the CISF project in this financial year in line with the recommendations received by the department from National Treasury in March 2022. And finally, Chairperson, NRADI remains totally committed to fulfilling the expectations of South Africans to manage the disposal of radioactive waste on a national basis by ensuring that all applicable laws, regulatory standards and requirements for protecting the health, safety and security of our people and the environment, both now and in the future, are complied with. With that, I thank you. Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, CFO, and thank you, COO. And just in conclusion, Chair, I would just like to say our mandate, as it's seen here, is very extensive, complex, and it's very highly technical. It's extensive in the sense that we have to dispose of all the classes of radioactive waste, and that is coming from the waste generators, Nexa, Eskom, other small waste generators, your food irradiators, research places, hospitals, and also in the case where there has to be decontamination and decommissioning and decontamination of all these facilities. It is really complex also in the sense that before even new power plants can be built or new facilities can be built, we have to make plans for the waste that will come out at the end. And also in the case if the country decides not to even build new power plants, the existing one as well as the existing facilities, the waste that comes out of that still becomes our responsibility. So this really indicates, and it is also technical in the sense that now we have to come up with those solutions and, you know, be in the minds of the waste generators and plan for that. So that really requires buy-in from the policy as well as the decision makers. It really needs buy-in from the stakeholders, the communities, the public. And it also needs technical and scientific capability within the organization. And as it has been mentioned, the challenge that we really have at this stage is the financial, the funding for all the programs that we have to handle. Thank you, and back to you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Rwadi. Can we then move to NERSA to do their presentation? Thank you.
Thank you, Acting DG. Thank you, Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee. I am Zandi Limbungo, so the interim chairperson of NERSA, and a presentation will be done by our CEO, Advocate Sithole, supported by her executive team. And some of the issues that will be highlighted in the presentation is the actual annual performance plan for the year 2022 and 23, as well as the budget. And the presentation will highlight the various regulatory and organizational activities as depicted in the plan, as well as the key challenges that NERSA is faced with, you know, on an ongoing basis, and how the portfolio committee can support NERSA. Thank you. Over to Advocate Sithole.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Acting DG, DDGs, Chairpersons, Board Members and CEOs of entities within the mineral resources and energy sectors, colleagues and support staff from different structures present in this morning on this platform. Good morning. Chairperson, in terms of the structure of our presentation, it is in two parts, and the first part being the executive summary that is on pages 4 to 21, And the detailed section on our APP and budget is on slides 32 to 72. Our presentation will cover what is mainly in the executive summary on our annual report, on our annual performance plan and budget for the year 2022-23. Chairperson, I will be assisted by our CFO, Ms. Bulelo Pono, who will present the slides on our budget for the same year. With your permission, Chairperson. And thereafter, after the budget presentation, I'll briefly present our challenges in regulating the three industries, as well as some challenges at an organizational level, which we will still be facing in this financial year in executing our regulatory mandate. Chairperson, in terms of this particular slide, on the first slide on our introduction, I won't get into detail into it, but I'll just summarize what is contained in it. This slide, Chairperson, and the next one gives a high-level view of NERSA's regulatory mandate in terms of regulating the three industries, which are electricity, petroleum pipelines, and pipe gas. And we're also indicating in the slide that in terms of executing our regulatory mandate, in the decision-making process, we have tools or mechanisms that we have put in place to assist the regulator in its decision-making process. And we also are highlighting in the slide that how the regulator is funded and the negative impact caused by COVID-19 to its funding mechanism, which may continue in this financial year, Chairperson. Chair, in terms of the next slide, we are highlighting the fact that our performance for the previous year, which is 2021-22, is at 90% as at 31 March 2022. However, this achievement is still subject to the AG's audit process. We are also indicating the fact that in terms of our board, we have three vacancies, and these vacancies have had an impact in terms of the composition of subcommittees and committees that are required by the board to execute its mandate. And we are also highlighting that the vacancy rate that we have as at 31st March 2022 is at 4.5%, and also highlighting the fact that we have 51% of management position held by women. And in terms of the actual process that we have followed in developing our APP, we took a new approach in our processes, which was to focus on the value add created by NERSA in regulating the mandated energy industries. And this has led to new outcomes in our strategic plan. And this process was over and above following the required planning prescripts. We also took into account developments at global, continental, and regional level, and regional and as well as national level in terms of the economy and as well as within the regulated industries. Chair, the manner in which we have developed our APP was to have programs and related activities classified into regulatory and as well as organizational. And in terms of our regulatory activities, they are grouped into Program 1, which is a program on regulatory service delivery, and Program 2, which is on advocacy and engagement. And Chairperson, on this slide, we are sharing with members what is under Program 1, which is the one on regulatory service delivery. We have sub-program for the three regulated industries with key activities, strategic outcomes in terms of what's in our strategic plan and as well the envisaged impact. We are also indicating the relevant MTSF priority, which is a priority 2 in relation to this program 1. Chair, in terms of the key activities that we have on these slides, these are activities that are set for the three industries that we regulate, which is the setting and approval and or approval of tariffs and prices, license and registration, compliance, monitoring and enforcement, dispute resolution, including mediation, arbitration and handling of complaints, the setting of rules, guidelines and codes for the regulation of the three industries. And in terms of the strategic outcomes, it is the efficiency and facilitating entry, setting prices and resolving disputes, and having a stable and diverse energy sector system and pricing regime which support access to regulatory services and are delivered on time and to quality standards. So in terms of the impact, I would not go into all the points in terms of the envisaged impact. However, we do envisage that with these activities, there will be economic growth through affordable prices and tariffs, and also the balancing of the interested parties within the regulated industries, and also an increase in energy capacity within the country, and as well as ensuring an orderly development of the regulated industries. I will stop there in terms of the impact. And in terms of program two, we have sub-programs which are regulatory and policy advocacy and customer and stakeholder engagement. With regard to the regulatory and policy advocacy sub-program, the activities and strategic outcomes and the envisaged impact that we would have, we are going to have a regulatory advocacy aimed at improvement of the regulatory framework provided through legislation, regulation, and government policies, and as well as regulatory policy and advocacy procedure that we are going to be putting in place. In terms of the strategic outcome, Chairperson, we are planning to have an industry regulatory framework that is relevant to the effective regulation for the benefit of customers and stakeholders, and as well as innovation that drives our responses to the transition of the regulated industries. And we believe the impact would be to have investor confidence and lessening the regulatory burden, and as well as providing regulatory certainty. And in terms of the sub-program on customer and stakeholder engagement, the activities and strategic outcome and envisage impact that we would have to engage stakeholders within the regulated industries, and as well as conduct education programs in the industries that we are regulating. And the strategic outcome there is an integrated value-add service to customers. And the impact that we are expecting is to have an effective and efficient regulation supported by appropriate systems, processes, procedures, and resources. The investor confidence and lessening the regulatory burden on licensees, and also creating regulatory certainty. In relation to our organizational activities, they are grouped into four, Chairperson, and the first one, which is program two, is also on advocacy and engagement, program three on innovation, program four on operational efficiency and quality management, and program five is on people and organizational culture. Chairperson, the next slide lists all the programs that I've just read out on our in terms of our organizational programs, and the activities thereof are to, in terms of the first one on advocacy and engagement, we have an activity on creating partnerships to position NERSA as a recognized regulator nationally, regionally, and internationally, and as well as to implement the stakeholder management plan. And with regard to the third program, I have activities on the development of information management framework, and as well as the implementation of our ICT strategy. And on the fourth program, we have activities in terms of having to revise the NERSA operating model, financial sustainability strategy and plan, and also having to revise the organizational business processes and also implementation of the gender mainstreaming activities. And the last program at organizational level is to have an organizational culture and as well as a skills development for our staff. And the outcome that is expected is an integrated and value-add service to customers. And the impact, we believe it will be having an effective and efficient regulation supported by appropriate systems, processes, and procedures. Chairperson, the next slide on human resources, I think what we are sharing with members in terms of that slide is to highlight that our staff complement that has been approved is at 253, and out of that 253, we have 242 that have been filled and 11 that are still vacant. However, it is important to indicate that of the 11, 5 are at an advanced stage of being filled. And in terms of that total staff complement of 242, we are sharing with members that 58% are occupied by women at management level and as well as staff level. And also to indicate that our current staff with disabilities is at currently at 2%. The next slide, Chairperson, I won't go into detail with it. It highlights the program that we have on the HR side, and these are four programs, and they are job shadowing, and learnership and internship, external bursary, a scheme exchange program, and training with other regulators within the SADC region. And the highlights on this slide are that there are the first, the second, and the fourth program. We have been carrying it out as NESA for the past 5 years, and it has have been beneficial to NESA and as well as those that are participating in it. However, the program on the bursaries scheme is only a year or two old. And in terms of that, Chairperson, we have awarded bursaries to three recipients, and one of them being a woman, and she has since finalized her master's degree in electrical engineering, and we are waiting the results of the other two. We are also highlighting that in terms of our learnership and internship program, we have managed to have three of the participants being placed into permanent position. One was within NESA and the other two was with other regulators. Chairperson, with your permission, may I request our CFO, Ms. Ono, to come and share with the members our budget for the year 2022-23. And then I will come back, Chairperson, just to summarize the key challenges that we are going to be faced with in regulating the three industries in the year 2022-23. Thank you, Chairperson. Ms. Ono.
Thank you, CEO. And good morning to the honorable members and all protocol observed, to the meeting participants. I'll take us through the NESA budget for 2022-23 and just give high-level highlights in terms of what we've planned. Just before I go into the numbers, I just want to mention that when we prepared the budget, it was prepared with an awareness of the current constrained macroeconomic environment. We are aware of the changing landscape in terms of the transformation in the electricity sector. We also are aware that there are supply constraints in both our gas and petroleum sectors. Therefore, when we prepared our budget, we had that in mind. In terms of our projected revenue for 2022-23, we projected 337 million. This is mainly from charging levies and license fees to our regulated industries. We'll see that there's a minimal increase in our revenue because we have not increased the levies to our petroleum and gas sectors. And we've done that by, we're able to do that by utilizing our accumulated surpluses. I'll talk to that further down. We've had minimal increases in our license fees to the electricity industry. Therefore, you'll see on the next slide, slide 21. I'll just talk to that slide. Please, Ms. Hrabe, slide 21. You'll see that overall, our total revenue compared to the prior year is just increased by 0.74%. Then moving to our operating expenditure, our operational requirements is 397 million for the year. And our cost drivers are mainly our employment costs. You see the 286 million. Then it's followed by professional fees, which is made up mainly of the legal fees with the ongoing court actions against NERSA. And also we do request consulting services to conduct some of the independent technical audits on the distribution network and so on to support our regulatory functions. We've tried to cut costs as far as possible due to the way we work, the change in the way we work, but we've ensured that we invest some of the savings back to the ICT infrastructure. You'll see our projected deficit there's 59 million, as I've indicated before. This deficit is funded from our accumulated surpluses. We do get the required approvals from the Minister and National Treasury to do this. And we do this in order to reduce the impact of levy increases to our licensees. Then in terms of our capital expenditure, it's only around 13 million. And there as well, it's mainly the planned ICT infrastructure to augment, you know, our regulatory functions and replacement of some of the old operating assets. I'll end there, CEO, and over to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, CFO. And Chairperson, with your permission, I will proceed to our key challenges. Chairperson, the next four slides highlights our key challenges that we will still face. We will still be facing within the 2022 financial year. And they are grouped into the three regulated industries and as well as at the organizational level. Chair, we have previously shared most of these challenges with the committee in the past, and so they are still challenges that we are going to be facing, as I've said, in this, in executing our plans for the 2022-23 financial year. Chair, with your permission, I will not go through the challenges as indicated in the presentation, but just highlight one or two main points in a brief manner from each of the industries. Starting with the electricity industry, Chairperson, just to summarize the challenge there, which is the need to finalize the review of the governing legislation and policies for the electricity industry, which have not been reviewed for at least over 13 to 15 years, whilst the industry is evolving at a high speed. And this has posed a challenge in terms of us having to regulate those changes that are that keep on coming within the industry. We do acknowledge the fact that there is some progress that has been done by our policymaker in this regard. However, we believe that the pace at which it's being done can be sped up such that we are able to do what we are expected to do within the industry. For the pipe gas industry, Chairperson, we wish to highlight that as well, there is a need to finalize the legislation and policies that are required to regulate this particular industry. We also note as well there that the Chair, there is some progress in terms of the review of the legislation and some of the policies that are required. We also wish to highlight within the gas industry that there is a decline in gas, which we believe requires government interventions. We have indicated, Chairperson, the proposal in terms of what is it that government can do to assist our country in addressing this decline in gas supply. For the petroleum pipeline industry, Chairperson, the main challenge there, again, there is a need to have the a governing legislation and other policies reviewed as well to enable us to regulate the industry in a much more effective manner. We also wish to highlight the challenge of vandalism to the infrastructure, Chairperson of Petroleum, as well as the product theft, which has an adverse impact on the security of supply and tariffs. Chair, at organizational level, the main challenge is with regard to the decline in our revenue collection, since we are funded through levies and license fees that are payable to NESA by licensed entities. So the collection of these levies has declined due to as well a decline in the volumes that are needed to meet the required levels of revenue to fund NESA. Chairperson, those are in a nutshell our challenges as NESA in terms of the regulating the three industries. The list that has been shared with members is not exhaustive, but we have decided to just bring those that are in our presentation. In terms of the continued support that we are requesting, Chairperson, is that I think we have all already touched on this, the speedy finalization of our governing legislation and policies, and also it's proper for us to acknowledge the progress that's been made to date in terms of the draft amendment bills. And we are also, Chairperson, requesting support that maybe in terms of our regulatory processes, we have a formalized process of using alternative dispute resolution as a first process to dispute that we are faced with in terms of us and our licensed entities or any other interested party, which is provided, which will minimize the costly court processes, which also take a long. And our current NERA Act only specifies that our decision can only be challenged through a process with the High Court. Chairperson, the harmonization of frameworks to allow cross-border trade within the SADC region and the continent, it's necessary. And more specifically, as we have indicated that we are experiencing a decline in gas supplies. And this, if the harmonization, if it's done, it will allow us to also get gas from other neighboring countries. Chair, I think I would not go through all of them in terms of the support that we need in the interest of time. And moving on to our conclusion, Chairperson, would like to indicate that the results of NESA's work continues to have a profound impact on the lives of ordinary people as well as on the economy of the country. The regulation of the three industries continues to pose some challenges for the energy regulator, in that the energy regulator is faced with a task of having to balance interests of different parties within the regulated industries. And Chair, we also are indicating that there is an urgent need of finalizing the governing legislation. I think this has been repeated a few times in our presentation, which shows that it is critical for us to have these the finalization of our legislation and policies. And Chair, to deal with regulatory challenges as NESA, we have come up with various initiatives to refine our regulatory practices and methodologies, and in our quest to become a recognized world leader in energy regulation, and we will continue to do so. I thank you, Chairperson, and that is the end of our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Before I can hand over to you, I'd just like to make to take this opportunity to introduce Ms. Sandile Mpungos as the acting NERSA chairperson after the passing of Mr. Mokoena. That is our current chairperson of NERSA, Ms. Sandile Mpungos. So I can take, I will hand over to you, Chairperson, with all the four entities that we have presented as we were requested to do so before lunch. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Acting DG, for the submission. I hope we're not far from that much from time. The host muted me. He's not telling me why he has muted me. Honorable members, there it is. I won't limit you again, but you are allowed to refer us to any parts that you wish in terms of the presentation that has been made. Can I then get questions? I see the hand of Honorable Milam. It seems that's the only hands. Honorable Malinga. Those are the only two hands. Honorable Malem, I'll come back after Honorable Malinga.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Chairperson, let me welcome the presentations. Chairperson, I'm not going to talk to Nexa because we spoke to them 2 weeks ago and most of my questions at the time were answered. But I am going to talk to the other presentations, if I may. I'd like to start with the NNR. So let me start on the NNR with your priorities for 2020 through to 2025. And you talk about the nuclear installation site license for PASPINT. Now, it's my understanding that the preferred site in terms of EIA and the like was Danafontein, and yet no public hearings or any progress is being made along that route. So can I get an indication as to why that is with regard to the Danafontein site as opposed to the rapid progress on the TASPIN site? Then I'd like to talk to the steam generator replacement. And my concern here is that I am informed, and in fact this committee was informed, that the safety case for the steam generator replacement was not submitted timeously, and that was part of the reason for the delays on the project with regard to the steam generator replacements at Coburg. Can I get some clarity on that, please? Because it is a major issue. I'm also concerned that with regard to Coburg, generally speaking, there appears to be a number of issues regarding safety. And I want to raise one issue in particular, and that is that in the middle of March, there was a work stop implemented at Coburg following a significant incident, which apparently could have resulted in the loss of the operating unit. Now, this is not my words. These are the words of an ESCOM internal newsletter. And they basically note that while carrying out the required maintenance on Unit 2, an individual cut the valve of the nuclear sampling systems 1REN-168BB on Unit 1 instead of the same valve on Unit 2. This was eventually identified and classified as a significant error because it had the potential to, amongst other risks, drain the accumulator of the safety injection system tank. Of further concern is that the same document notes that this is the second time that this has occurred during the same shutdown and that this has potentially devastating consequences. Now, I'd really like some comment from the NNR as to what they are doing to address this particular issue with regard to safety at Coburg. It appears that there are a number of incidents that are being brushed under the carpet or not reported or not adequately dealt with, and I'd really welcome some clarity in that regard. So just let me get back to my notes here. Okay. Then if we can just move to the finances of the NNR. I just have a question. And it occurs to me that the NNR is spending 58 million rand to build a site office in Cape Town. Now, I'd like some clarity as to how many people will be accommodated at the site office, where it will be located, and why we need to build a whole new building when the department has a number of empty offices or underutilized offices. And I think particularly, Chairperson, you will recall when we did oversight of the PetroSA facility in Bellville, where there were whole sections of the office that weren't being utilized at all. So my question is, why is the NNR not utilizing other facilities that are within the department and could be utilized? Rather, why are they going out and spending 58 million rand to build a completely new facility? Then, it's slide 32, which is your expenditure per economic classification. And I'm looking at the blue bar for 2020-2021, and comparing it to the blue bar for 2021-2022. Now, the blue bar is compensation of employees. And I'd really like to know how it is that the compensation of employees can jump so significantly in one financial year, and what the cause of that is. So I'd welcome some input on that, please. Okay, moving on to the next one. And I think that was Norwedi. Thank you for the presentation. Just as a starting point, can I get some information, please, as to how far along on the process are we in transferring the license from Nexa to Norwedi? I'd really like to know when is Norwedi going to have that under their control? The second issue that I'd like some clarity on is one of the primary challenges that we face as a country is obviously storage of spent fuel. And I see your CISF priority. But my question is anything being done to accelerate the long-term storage of high-level waste, particularly in light of the fact that government appears to be pursuing a nuclear new build, that Coburg is undergoing life extension, and that Nexa are replacing Safari 1 with a multi-purpose reactor, which means that there is going to be more high-level waste generated in the short term. So is anything being done to accelerate the storage of high-level waste? My last question to Norwedi is that there has recently been a bit of an outbreak of news around the lack of consultation of local communities in the Falputs area. Could we get some feedback on that, please? And could we get some comment as to why this lack of consultation appears to be taking place or why the consultation is not taking place, and what's being done to rectify that situation? Then the next one is Nexa. Sorry, I'm just opening the presentation here. One second. So as far as Nexa is concerned, a couple of issues.
Is it Nexa or NERSA?
Nursa, Chair. My apologies, Nursa.
Okay.
It's been a long week, Chair. So what was I saying? Nursa, eh? Nursa. There we go, presentation. Okay. So my first question on Nursa is this. And I'm primarily going to focus on the electricity segment of Nursa. there has been a lot of commentary from analysts, energy experts, the media, and from role players in the energy sector that the regulatory environment around IPPs and municipal procurement and sub 100 megawatt generation is still too onerous. Is anything being done to review that regulatory environment? Is anything being done to streamline the processes so that processes can run simultaneously? Is anything being done to reduce the amount of paperwork and red tape that is hindering bringing new generation capacity online? And so the bottom line is, are we making it easier to create new generation capacity? And if so, how are we making it easier? My second question is, with regard to electricity pricing, there have been a number of challenges over the last several years. And I would welcome any feedback regarding the cost of litigation in this regard. I know that NERSA has been in and out of court with Eskom. So how much has that cost in the past couple of financial years with regard to litigation? And what is your anticipated cost in the forthcoming financial year with regard to litigation? While we're talking about electricity pricing, and I agree with you that the electricity pricing review and the review of the ERA are both urgent, and I would encourage this committee to prioritize that dealing with those matters. My question is, who do you prioritize? I noticed that in the challenges that were in, I think it was the last slide, you said that one of the challenges is balancing competing interests of the stakeholder, the consumer, the licensee, et cetera, et cetera. So my question is, in balancing those interests, whose interests take priority? How do you determine which is the most important element of that pricing model? Sorry, I'm just going through my notes, Chair. Okay, Chair, let me leave it there. If I have a further question, I'll come. Oh, sorry. There are a number of pieces of legislation that need to be amended, rectified, updated, etc. And I think that, and this is probably a question more to the department than to NERSA directly, but maybe it would be worthwhile providing this committee with a timeline of when those pieces of legislation are going to be tabled in Parliament, when we can expect them to be brought to us for consideration, and Chair, maybe to the Secretariat, that we could look at how we slot those into our program in order to make sure that we deal with them timely. I know that we've spent a long time on the Gas Amendment Bill, and we haven't even really started going through it clause by clause yet. But we need to look at how we can speed that process up. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to yourself, members of the Portfolio Committee, our committee staff, the department, CEOs, chairpersons of boards, and CFOs of entities on the platform, and everybody else on the platform. Receive greetings from myself. Chairperson, I think most of my questions have been covered by Honorable Malem. In terms of your the regulations that NERSA, the regulator chair, electricity regulator, they were talking about, that when can they be brought to us, especially to the department, because on the challenges that the CEO presented to us is that they have outdated electricity regulation, act, and pricing policy, that when maybe the department anticipate to bring those to us. Chairperson, let me also welcome the welcoming remarks by Mr. Nichols in terms of reducing their losses from 200 to 100. And this, I think he said this financial year somewhere, there'll be somewhere around 23 million. I think that is very, very applaudable, Chairperson. In terms of NNR, I think also Honorable Malem covered me on the logic by NNR to build the new offices in Cape Town, whereas we have so much or many office spaces that we have seen during our oversight, Chairperson. Chairperson Narwadi, I think Narwadi, they are the only entity that has been constantly giving us clean audit, and for that we give them a thumbs up, Chair. But I think, Chair, on their slide, I think it was slide 7, I think it's on program 1, they only have 2 interns, and they have those interns for 23, 24, 22, 23, 24, 25. Why only 2 interns, and where, which areas are those interns will be coming from, Chair? Also on their financials, Chair, with or without the revenue from the Valput nuclear license, I see that on during 2023-24, their goods and services, they are, I think they are decreasing. Also again, going up in 2023-24. Also on engineering, technology, and NGS, also science, engineering, and technology. I think it's the same thing that is happening in 2023-24. And why is that, Chairperson? Let me stop there, Chair, because most of my questions were in a nutshell covered by Honorable Mayor. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Maybe let me start with this one. You reminded me something, Honorable Malem. I don't know how we will deal with it and whether we will need guidance. But just on the issue of the legislation, yes, it's true. We can try and quantify, but what is also in front of us is the upstream petroleum resources bill. It is on the program that we adopted as a committee. I may not be sure of the date or day, but it's in our program. We can then look at others, but as far as I know, that's the only one for now that is in front of the committee. One issue that I think, looking at the fact that it's unavoidable that we might end up dealing with two legislation at the same time, is to see whether we can get an allocated time outside. You remember we give us strictly those dates that we're having. It's either, if that is possible, we may have to follow this procedure, having one meeting in the morning and then afternoon, same day, dealing with legislation subject to Parliament. Either we use a Friday, we'll have to come back to the committee on how we'll handle the issue of two legislations. But we can look. The second thing, which is why I may be abusing my position as a chair, but I'm sure members can also help and guide. I have requested the researcher before we are told that can now, when all the reports, the report in totality of the Zondo Commission is out, can he look on issues that might be, in as much as it's still got issue, we don't know how it will be referred to Parliament, or it will have to be referred to Parliament, or we need to be proactive. But I've requested the researcher to check whether are there issues that relates to this committee, or that may require the committee to look at them and agree on whether, on what form it then responds to those issues before even it is referred to us. I'm taking the opportunity because you have raised another matter, just to say this, because we may never know, there could be a lot of issues that relates to our work as public representatives responsible for minerals and energy. I think we'll have to find a way on how do we deal with the two issues that you have just raised. But I think on the upstream, it's already in front of us. That I don't want to bother you. Thank you for your presentations. But I will always have this grievance generally on the presentations that I think the public service has got one limitation. There is something called the school arrestation. The way they put, it's not wrong, don't take me wrong. But at times for someone, especially who might be a ruralitarian like myself, find it very difficult to get the direct point that come what may, can you help us here? Come what may, can you consider this? Sometimes when these things, even when you deal with your annual performance plans or even your priorities, it's very difficult, except if someone goes deeper to understand what you are pleading in front of the committee. I don't want to single one out, but let me leave it. The risk is very high that I always say this thing. You may want to impress the committee by giving us all the glossy picture. And you get disadvantaged by the fact that you have not been able to convince the committee so that it can play a cooperative role in assisting if it needs be. But there are only three things, and unfortunately they fall under NNR. Just help me with clarity on three things. One, it might be similar to what Honorable Naila Magene had raised, but for me it's from a different angle. If I got you wrong, then my apologies. My first issue that I wanted to give clarity. You said, as part of your revenue collection, part of the challenges that you are having is that there are some who are unable to, when you do your collection, who are unable to meet the requirements, and some are even under liquidation, if I'm correct. Now, the big question is, wouldn't it help for this committee to understand specifically where are the challenges as far as the issues or is there a matter of privacy? Maybe you have sworn into privacy that you can't mention the names, because we must know who are those people. From a committee point of view, if these are entities, some are entities, because we raised that thing, are entities under government, and probably some might be even like we happened in our first assignment to find that some of those entities were even falling under the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy as a new department. Can you share just a few examples so that we can know of those while falling behind? The second one, when we're engaging with NERSA, at some point there was the issue of the independence. I know it may not relate to budget and also to your annual performance, but it may sound, except if you didn't put it correctly, on the issue of the tariffs that you were talking about, the increase in tariffs, I hope I got you correct. There is something that says the minister has made a determination on tariffs and then is only waiting for the concurrence. Wouldn't someone, like I'm making an example, say, but you have an independent regulator in the form of NERSA, that makes a determination makes a price determination. Obviously, it will then have, if possible, interact. Where does the difference comes in? Because my take will be that as a regulator, you are the one who set up the tariffs. And based on those tariffs, maybe you then get a nod from the minister with the, we call it an approval from the minister and authorization, whatever the way you may put it. But I'm not sure whether I understand correctly. Your regulation capacity might be different from other regulators, and I'm making a specific reference now to NERSA, that NERSA is completely within its powers to make price determination. The last point, can you share with this committee, because we're dealing with budget, so that we can see where you save and where it is possible. If I got you correctly, I think you said in Centurion, over a period of 10 years, now this month, if I'm not mistaken, you will be paying your last installment and you will be owning that building. I get the point that Honourable is raising with the MLN is raising with regards to Cape Town and others, which I don't think there can be a major disagreement on. But can you share probably what would have been the cost of buying that building? And for a period, if somebody buys a house, it takes 20 years or so. And we find that in some cases, our own entities and our departments at times, they opt for rental. Now, we want to see the advantage, which will mean Centurion might be, if instead of Pretoria, make an example, Centurion instead of Pretoria or Johannesburg might be quite reasonable when it comes to the issue of office space. What would have been the general price or cost of buying that building that you are finishing now? And what are the maintenance responsibilities that you might be able as an entity of the state? And is there anything that can be learned? What would have been the disadvantage of doing rental space? I think if I need those clarities, and I'm raising this thing on the upfront because I feel at times the choice of rental is more costly compared to the cost of ownership. I think let me leave it there for now. I will wait for the the issue of the compensation of employees. At times it becomes difficult because compensation of employees, I'm not saying you don't pay them in full, but maybe compensation is only the cost of salary, not necessarily include other issues that would be impacting on the conditions of employment. But if you were to say, for example, under this period, you would have had too much as far as the COVID limitations are concerned. Now, the big question is, will that compensation include what others call it allowances, and including transport or locomotion? I don't know what you call in other areas. One would say probably you should be making savings during that period because no one is traveling much. Everyone is working from home. Maybe even that, I think, is also under NNI. Let me give it to you, FDG.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will request the CEOs or the board chairpersons to respond to the questions. We will start with NNR, and when we finish, then we will go to NRADI, and then after that, it will be NERSA. So we'll start with NNR to respond to all the questions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Acting DG. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. I will take a shot at most of the questions, and I will leave some of the questions for the CFO that have got to do with financial issues. Honorable Miller, the site office in Cape Town, why are we building it? Why are we not rather utilizing space of the state buildings that are available there? Well, the NNR as an entity on its own, as way back as in 1985 when the site was commissioned, had offices in Cape Town. That is why it's called site office, and that is an international practice that you must have staff at proximity of the nuclear power plant so that they can respond to any alarm and emergency that may arise. Now, the NNR at that time procured, way before our time, offices, office space there. And with time, that office space, as our operations and involvement with the site began to grow, that space became more and more inadequate. First, in terms of size, but secondly, in terms of aging. And so at some point, even before my time, the National Treasury put aside a grant for the refurbishment of a special grant for the refurbishment of those offices. And as that was looked into through some technical evaluations by civil structural engineers, a conclusion was reached that refurbishing the structure was not going to yield much because the structure is old. But again, given the growth and the projected growth at that time for staff, even if the refurbishment would have been successful, the accommodation, the size to accommodate staff was not going to solve the problem. Therefore, the board approved the construction of new offices. So destroying that office, demolishing that office, the old structure and building at the same place. So we're not buying a new site or what? It's our site that we've had this way back as 1980 something, or even prior to that, because 1984 was when the stations started to operate. So probably the NNR started to have that place before even the station started to operate. So that is what led to where we are. But the money that was allocated by the National Treasury was not enough to build a new structure because it was meant for refurbishment. So we had over the years to put some money on top of that allocated money from the Treasury so that we could reach a level where we were ready and we could afford to build offices. Now, that was also informed, the fact that we needed bigger offices was also informed by a number of developments. One, the fact that we're going to have a major refurbishment at Quebec meant we needed more staff at Quebec. Secondly, as the plant ages, you need to increase oversight. Therefore, we needed more staff at Quebec, and therefore we needed more sitting space. But thirdly, at that time, there was an issue of new builds that we had to also keep in mind. So our office construction and the size was predicated mostly on the safe continuation of the Quebec nuclear power plant, safe continued operation of the Quebec nuclear power plant. Now, the addition of new builds in the Western Cape would have also been almost readily accommodated for in the new building. But by and large, the new building that we are currently constructing is to cater for the continued safe operation of Quebec. Now, if Quebec does not make the cut for long-term operation, the NNR still has got the legal obligation to continue oversight for Quebec for the next maybe 20 to 30 years until you decommission. And you have to license the decommissioning activities. You have to provide daily presence as they decommission and demolish the plant. So the presence of the NNR in Cape Town, whether LTO or no LTO, is still going to be needed for the foreseeable future. That was the rationale behind the site office in Cape Town. Secondly, you asked about the safety incidents at Quebec, which you very aptly quoted from their internal magazine about, newsletter about. Honorable Mayhem, we are also very, very concerned about such lapses. Now, when such lapses happen, we demand corrective action from the licensee. So what ESCOM did was to stop the activities in that area for that outage and take everybody to training so that you can begin to make some, you know, awareness. It's all around the issue of a degradation of safety culture. We have highlighted that to ESCOM and to the senior leadership of ESCOM. Our inspectors continue to increase their visibility throughout the outage. As a matter of fact, last week, the board was at Quebec for the same oversight visit during the outage itself. And therefore, we are as concerned as you are, and our response is to increase our oversight and our presence into the outage activities at the plant. But ultimately, say, there is a mantra, a universal mantra, that the ultimate responsibility for safety of the nuclear installation lies with the operator. It cannot be that the NNR would be at every corner when the ESCOM technicians are dismantling valves and cutting pipes and doing this. It is important that ESCOM itself provides its own self-inspection and self-supervision over their safety, nuclear safety activities in the plant. And therefore, we demand consistently from ESCOM for them to show cause that, in fact, that is happening. So we are, so to speak, on their case as far as that is concerned. The third question is Hayes Point versus Daynefontein nuclear installation site license. Why Hayes Point and not Daynefontein? Sir, we operate on the basis of what the applicant puts forth. Now, the applicant has prioritized for themselves the NISO process for Hayes Point, and subsequently, the Daynefontein would follow. Now, what came to us first was the Hayes Point, and we dealt with that. And as it was mentioned in the presentation, we will be issuing a record of decision on the suitability of the Hayes Point site in all likelihood before the end of this month. We're trying to get a special board meeting to make a decision on this, if we can. If not, it will be in June, but we are trying to get it done before the end of May. So it is not our choosing whether Hayes Point or Daynefontein. It is what the applicant puts forth, and the law says and our regulation says we need to be responsive to what the applicant put forth. And that's what we're doing. And your next question is about the steam generator replacement delay. And you say this was due to a delayed submission of the safety case. Or basically you're saying the SGR was, the project was delayed because the safety case was not ready. We are not aware of that. What we are aware of is that there are internal planning issues at ESCOM between themselves and their service providers, who are mostly external from the country, foreign companies. And as a result of their disagreements on certain issues, and in view, of course, of the risks that were associated with possible severe load shedding towards the winter or during the winter, ESCOM has decided on its own that it would not be advisable to take the units offline for the SGR project. And therefore, they deemed it a better option to defer it. It had nothing to do with the safety case. It was their own decision based on their own internal analysis or risk analysis. Then the compensation of employees, I will leave that to the CFO, but I also wanted to look at, and I'll also leave the revenue collection issues to the CFO. But I wanted to talk up to respond to the chairperson question on authorization fees. Why wait for the concurrence of the Minister of Finance? Our act is clear, chairperson, that the board determines the tariff increase and sends that after, of course, internal cost analysis, and sends that to the minister for approval. But the act further says that upon getting that determination from the board, the Minister of Energy must get concurrence from his or her counterpart from the National Treasury Ministry. And it is so crafted in the law. And I can tell you, there are times when the two ministers did not agree, but ultimately we did not get what we wanted. So every time we submit, we always make room for most of the time getting less than what we request. And therefore, we need to cut down on certain things to be able to accommodate what we could not get from the two ministers. But it is in the law, and there has not been any inclination or any appetite to change that. Now, CFO, can you talk about the compensation of employees, revenue collection, and the cost of buying the building in Centurion? Thank you.
Thank you very much, CEO. And I will start with the issue of compensation of employees. So in 2018-19, we completed our staff rationalization process, wherein we realigned activities and repackaged how different divisions and subdivisions are structured. After that process, we then developed what we called a human resource plan for 5 years. Now, according to this plan, we, in line with our financial capacity, we planned how many employees are we going to employ at what time and from which categories. After we have implemented the rationalization structure and ensure that it's functioning optimally. Now, from the on the 2019-20 financial year, that's when we got the COVID grip, and we couldn't do much on implementing that structure as it was planned. But from 2021-2022, as we came back, we started to then fill up all those vacancies that was planned for the period. And the movement from 2021 to 2022 was about 17%. So it was not really such a big movement, but in the main, there were those positions that we have to fill, point number one. Number two, was the issue of our Center for Nuclear Safety and Security, which is a new division that we are continuously capacitating, which deals mainly with our regulatory research capacity, which is based in University of Pretoria. Now, that is an area that we have been capacitating, and we intend to continue to capacitate in the medium term framework. We have seen the fruits of having that kind of a structure within our human resource plan, because when we're dealing with issues like the current needle in Facebook, we have seen those the outcomes of that or the deliverables of that unit coming into play, and it has helped a lot. So we intend to capacitate that unit as we go forward, as indicated by the CEO, with the long-term operations issues, the aging facilities. The regulatory vigilance is very important on our key nuclear operations, both NEXA and Quebec. So the increase in the compensation of employees for the 2022-2023, we are planning about 19% increase again, in line with those activities that I've indicated. There was an issue raised in terms of the bad debt. Chair, I must say that environment is under control, and I can indicate that there are no government entities that are owing us any money. The industry that is most affected is the mining industry. So amongst other things, you have got all your Shiva uraniums and couple of mining areas that are facing liquidations. Others are being bought over by other companies. So as that process is ensuing, there are some hiccups in the process. But I must say that a majority of them, we are not really writing them off, because there are still processes that are ongoing legally and otherwise that must pan out before we can determine them to be irrecoverable. So just for the record, on my table now, I'm considering the bad debts for the current financial year, and we are not really looking at a big figure. We are looking at around about 328,000. So it is fairly low, and we still have got that environment to a certain extent under control. The CEO have answered the issue of the tariff. The bond in Centurion, we have raised a bond of 80 million to procure the building that we are sitting on. Of course, we have since done a lot of developments in it. So in terms of value at this stage, it is current revaluations, it's sitting at about 120 or so million. So the advantages of buying the building, when we move into this building at the time around 2009, we had a lease with a procurement option. Therefore, when we did our calculations in terms of the value for money, we felt that since this was a new building, which will have minimal maintenance requirements, it will make more economic sense to procure it outright in 10 years, bond facility vis-a-vis continuously renting it, because our rental costs, they were even more than what we'll need to pay for the rental. And I must say that has worked well for us. It has its own disadvantages, Chair, that you cannot now easily, if your structure is going beyond your office capacity, easily extend and so on. But for our side, it has worked quite well, wherein we felt we have to increase the space. We have done remodeled some areas and did open plans, etc. It is for us working quite well. And the fact that we are completing to pay it now will free more resources, more of our financial resources to deal with other activities within our mandate. The maintenance costs, Chair, are not really bad. As I've indicated, it's a fairly new building. Those who have been here, they will have seen it is still in such a good shape. So we don't have a huge bill for our maintenance. We have got improvements that we continuously do. We have implemented what we call the emergency control center downstairs. To people who have been there, they will have seen it. So we are able at least to customize our building the way we see it suiting our needs from time to time. Chair, I think on that end, I will have answered all the questions that were deferred to myself by the CEO. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, CFO. Chair, we think we have tried to respond. We can take follow-up questions if we may have not hit the right notes at some point. Thank you.
Is Enradi?
Thank you, Chair.
If I'm not mistaken, Nersa.
Thank you, Chair. I will take the questions as were asked by Honorable Malham. The first question that he asked was how far is the nuclear license? Well, he said transfer. As it was also presented by the NNR, we are at the final stages for the license application. I would just like to mention that by November last year, NNR had approved all the safety case documents for the application of the nuclear installation license. And the public information document was also published last year for public comments. And those comments were also addressed to the satisfaction of the National Nuclear Regulator. And the process was the public participation process was also concluded at the end of November 2021. Amongst others, there was the issue of the registration of Valputz farms, and that was also concluded at the moment we have the title deed. As of last week, we have received indeed a letter from the National Nuclear Regulator seeking clarity on a few matters, and we are finalizing the responses to the regulatory body in that regard. The second question that was asked had to do with the long-term storage of waste, and specifically, I think they were also referring to the slide that we had that mentions CISF, which is the Central Interim Storage Facility, as a priority. The Central Interim Storage Facility is in the one that we are currently finishing off the feasibility report, and that has to do with the long-term storage. But as we know, that long-term storage will be storing the fuel away from the reactor at the Valputz site. And the long-term is about 50 to 70 years. However, we do know that the global consensus is that to finally dispose of high-level waste, which the spent nuclear fuel is the category thereof, you can do the biological repository. At this stage, NRWADI is also looking into other options or other solutions like that, but currently we are focusing on the long-term storage, looking into the fact that we currently now have the waste there at Quebec that needs immediate attention. The third question was on the recent media statements that were done that were indicating that NRWADI is not doing a public consultation. I would just like to mention that I think the statement that was out there in the media was actually
inaccurate because it was referring to Enradio as if we are already taking the waste there to the high level waste to Valpots. And we have responded by doing the media statement and clarifying the issue, because at this stage, Enradi does not have, number one, for the nuclear installation site, which is for the low-level waste, the one that we are applying the license thereof, currently that is being held by NEXA, and the public safety exercises or the public safety information activities are to be carried out by NEXA as the nuclear license installation. And in the last year or so, due to COVID, in-person meetings were not able to be held. Therefore, what Enradi has done, we have been at least sending out some presentations and to the community in that area. What we have also started doing as of February this year, we have started to visit the communities in and around the current nuclear installation to start with the preparations for the public awareness, to consult with the public to understand their expectations, as well as to sensitize them as we will be now holding the license in the future. So that's what we have done to date, and we will be continuing with those various exercises. And these activities we've been doing in conjunction with NEXA, as we are currently in that transition of obtaining the license, and we're working hand in hand with NEXA in that regard. In terms of the low-level waste license application, as I've mentioned earlier on, there was public consultation that was done, and as it is also a requirement in order for us to satisfy the requirements with the regulatory board. The fourth question that was asked by Honorable Malinga was on the internship program. Why are we only focusing on two interns per year? At this stage, when we were doing this plan, we were doing this plan based on our current situation, looking into the internal capacity, as well as looking into the availability of the funds that we have. So we had restricted the number of interns into that. However, we will also be working with other organizations that can support the internship programs. And the further question in that regard was as to in what areas will the interns be. We have now started to build the internal capacity in terms of the technical areas, and we are looking into developing the interns in the technical areas, because that's where we really need capacity. The last question I am going to leave that for the CFO to respond to. Mr. Daniel. CFO, the question that was asked on the Valpot license regarding goods services.
It assumes the CFO is not here, or is load shedded, or is muted.
Chairperson, am I audible now, perhaps?
Yes, now we hear you.
Okay, I see. Thank you, Chair. I see I'm audible now. Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson. The questions related to the economic classification of goods and services. That's the one question, and the other was around Program 3, Science, Engineering and Technology.
on the goods and services classification, the three slides that one would make reference to are slides 19, 23, and 26. But I will speak to slide 19, which is the slide relating to the INRADI operations. The budget on goods and services has moved from 8184 to 8262 in 23-24 to 9941 in 24-25. And due to the slightly better allocation from government appropriations in the outer 24-25 year, we've allocated a bit more money to the goods and services to normalize the goods and services baseline. We've started on a very incorrect baseline based on our initial budget back in 2016-17. And as the budget has grown, we tried to normalize the baseline. So you'll see that in 23-24, we've added a bit more to the goods and services. And one of the reasons that we've not added to the compensation of employees is because we, in line with Treasury's guidelines, tried not to increase the ceiling in the number of heads, as well as to ensure that the increases, the compensation of employee increases were in line with the compensation of employees guidelines for public entities. Hence, the goods and services budget was impacted with the growth on the outer year. In terms of program three, and that's the other question, science, engineering and technology has had a very conservative budget over the periods, and on obtaining a little bit more funding for the outer year, we've added to that budget, particularly for the purposes of research and development in that area, because that program has been severely underfunded over the past number of years. So that's the reason why there's been a growth in program three in the outer year, and the 23-24 year is a very minimal growth, and that's just based on the compensation of employees growth in that year in line with the COE guidelines of National Treasury. And finally, Chair, we do appreciate the comment on the clean audit status, and we are optimistic that we will sustain the status. Thank you.
Thank you, CFO. Back to you, Chair. I think that concludes the questions that were posed to INRADI. And perhaps if there's any clarity-seeking questions, we will be ready to take those. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We'll then go to NERSA. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Acting DG. Chairperson and members, the questions that were posed to NERSA are related to the NERSA's regulation of the electricity industry, and they were posed by Honorable Malam. I have tried to just summarize the essence of the question, Chairperson, and if my paraphrasing or summary is incorrect, I would ask that I be corrected. With regard to the first question, the question was, is there anything that NERSA is doing to make it easy to bring new generation capacity on board? Chairperson, what we have done as NERSA, we have reduced our regulatory processes, such as the timelines that are required in our applications process. For example, on the registration processes, we are required to process them within 60 days, and we have reduced that timeline to be 45 days. And on the public participation process that we are required to follow, on the generation side, we now issue advertisements at the same time as the applicants, because in terms of our processes, an applicant needs to advertise the application within the area that they are applying for the license for. And as well as NERSA, we do then publish a notice and requesting comments on that particular application that we would have received. We are, Chairperson, currently working on automating our regulatory processes which, as we have indicated in terms of our APP, it is part of our activities for this financial year, and it's going to be executed as part of our ICT strategy. And with regards to the cost, litigation cost, the past and the future, Chairperson, I will be assisted by the CFO in terms of responding on this on this question. But it's important for me to indicate that the number of cases that NERSA has been faced with has slightly gone down, and that has resulted in our litigation costs going down. And I think the CFO will give the figures for the past two financial years and our projection for the this financial year. On the issue of the interest, the question was, in whose interest do we take into account in the pricing model? Chairperson, we take interest of all affected parties into account. And as an example, for end users, Chair, whose interest would be to have affordable prices, we take that particular interest into account. And at the same time as well, Chairperson, for the regulated entities, we need to ensure that the regulated entity get a revenue that will make them remain viable as a business. And hence the indication that we need to balance those conflicting interests of the affected and interested parties in our presentation. Chairperson, in short, that those are our responses. However, the EM for the regulation of electricity is in the meeting. He may come in with your permission, Chairperson, to add if there's a need to. But at this stage, with your permission again, may I request that the CFO just share with members the cost of our legal cases. Chairperson, Ms. Bono, you may come in, and Mr. Mavuso, with the permission of the chair, may come in if he wants to add to the other responses that I've provided. Ms. Bono. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, CEO. In terms of the cost of litigation against NERSA, I'll start with 1920. The total cost was 25 million. And of that 25 million, 22 million related to cases on the electricity sector. In 2020-21, the cost was 21 million. And of that 21 million, 17.7 million related to electricity as well, electricity cases. Then in 21-22, the cost reduced to 16.8 million. And of that amount, 14 million related to cases in the electricity sector. The projection for 22-23, we've kept it at 18 million, and we're estimating around 10 million in the electricity sector. That's it on my side, CEO. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bono. Chairperson, I think we have responded to the question posed to NERSA, unless if members have follow-up questions. And as I said, I will be assisted by the Executive Manager for Electricity if there are any further input required on the electricity side. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Acting DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have, I think, dealt with all the questions, and I would like to hand over to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure whether there are any follow-ups, but if there are none, I want us to check who is available. Okay, Honorable Mylem, you want to make a follow-up?
Yes, Chair, thank you. Just two quick follow-ups. The first is to Nawedi, and I'm not sure if I missed it, or and so please excuse me if I did, but I didn't get an indication of whether or not the long-term storage of high-level waste had been accelerated, whether there was any timeline given for when that process would be put in place for long-term storage of high-level waste. I didn't get that answer, or maybe I didn't hear it. And then my second follow-up is to NERSA, and I want to, and I thank them very much for the response with regard to the easing of the regulatory requirements. But I want to draw their attention specifically to sub 100 megawatt generation for own use. And I mean, there are requirements there that seem somehow to be time wasting. And I'll give you an example, or two examples. The first being the requirement for a signed power purchase agreement or an offtake agreement. And so I think that we need to look at that. And the second is the public participation element when it's for own use. If I could get just some commentary as to, could we maybe look at easing the public participation requirement in that regard? Thank you, Chair.
Most definitely, you only used 1 minute. They can use 6 minutes to respond. And Radhi, it's 12 o'clock. Allow me, members, to say, Seth, be ready. And then we will see whether we can put somebody else after Seth. But can you give answers in Radhi and then NERSA?
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the CISF, I mentioned that currently we are concluding the feasibility study. And I think the feasibility study will also direct us further into the next steps once the review by experts has been completed. However, I would say the estimated time based on the current situation is that if we have the relevant funding, because this, according to the feasibility, we really need close to about 1.1 billion or so. But as I say, it is still being reviewed. We will know at the end of that review. If we have the relevant funding and the human resources that are needed, the estimation is that in and around 2030. Thank you, Chair.
NERSA.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, with your permission, may I ask Mr. Mavuso to just respond to the question? Mr. Mavuso.
Thank you, CEO. If I can respond to the question that was asked based on the registration process where there's a requirement to for supply purchase agreement. We are actually discussing with the president on how to ease this, and I'm confident to say that requirement will not be asked anymore. I think that was the main question that was on the purchase agreement. We will do away with the requirement.
Okay. Thank you very much on the responses. Please don't go. If you are going, leave someone who can answer questions. One of the things we've realized was that when people have already left, somebody makes a statement that takes us back to what would have been a response given by a previous one. So not saying, but someone who can account for this. I think we can still go, yeah. Seth, are you present? Okay.
Hey, Honorable Chair, good afternoon. Yes, we are present.
You are present and ready.
Yes, Chair. Should I go ahead?
Go ahead, I'm giving you 30 minutes. It means 25 to bring it back to me.
Thank you very much.
I will decide then.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Before I greet, I also would just like to ask that the administrator gives us the right for us to share the presentation so that I can do that while I'm talking. Good afternoon, Honorable Chair, and also to the Honorable Members. I'm also greeting our DG together with the colleagues from the DMRE, all the chairs and executives from the sister companies, and of course my own group and all protocol observed. So maybe just to kickstart, Chair, before I hand over to the executive to do the presentation, I think it's always useful to know who is here with me. So I'm accompanied by Chair Boya from PetroSA. I believe that Chair Makubane is also on the line, or she'll be joining shortly. Chair Sonzo as well from IGES. And apologies from the other chairs from PASA, Chair Masugu and Chair Madowe. And then the CEs, apologies from CEF CEO, but we do have Dr. Mukoka leading the delegation from the executives. Mr. Biso, I believe, is also on the line. Mr. Muache is here. And also we've got the acting CEO for PetroSA, Ms. Nemane, she's also present. Just to give a little bit of context again, it's, you know, in playing our oversight role as a board, obviously we always have to be alive to what is happening globally and also in our own economy. And I think it's very important that we understand the global dynamics because it impacts on how we source our products and how we move them around and ultimately how we actually price or how the price is going to impact us because all of that overall affects the economy and most importantly also the ordinary South African citizens. So if we look at the disruptive forces that we have experienced, I think we cannot forget the impact of COVID-19. In fact, it's quite scary that we see the numbers now going up to 9,000 again, which really gives us some uncertainty in how we operate our businesses. The technology as well is advancing, as we know, and there are different demands in terms of how we should introduce clean technologies. That makes the energy transition really inevitable. And of course, we can't leave out the geopolitical transition of conflict that is currently taking place with Russia and Ukraine. It has a huge impact. And we have seen that at some point we actually had to look at how we assist the South African community to ride the wave of the impact of the huge costs in terms of what they pay when they get to the petrol stations. So we play a very critical role, and it's a role that we are always aware of, and we know that we have to be always be on the lookout for what is going on, both locally and globally. The last point I want to make is just by way of introduction again is really to talk at five broad areas that are really urgent for us and we have to prioritize and keep focused on. The first one is the stabilization of PetroSA and of course looking at the turnaround which the executive is busy working on at the moment. But what is important to just share with the committee today is that we have had some changes in the leadership position. We currently have an acting CEO, Ms. Sandisiwe Nemane, who is also going to be doing a presentation. This was really necessitated by some challenges within the organization, which really made it very difficult for us to implement the recovery efforts. And therefore, we have had to make that shift in as far as PetroSA is concerned. The second part which I want to talk to is that in playing our oversight role again as the boards, we know that consequence management is very, very important. As a result, we have noticed that there are a number of acts of misconduct that we have seen across the group. For example, theft of diesel, procurement issues and dishonesty in general, some equipment that has been lost, and also some existence of ghost employees And as a result, we have had to suspend a number of executives across the group in Petros A, SSF, SEF, and also in AE. The other third element that I wanted to just highlight before I hand over again is talking to the issue of fixed costs. As you know, we are a Schedule 2 entity, which means that we do not receive any grants. We have to make money in our operations. And we do have a dual mandate, of course, which is that of commercial sustainability as well as developmental role. However, we have to remain commercially viable for us to deliver on our developmental role. And as such, we have found ourselves that we have been in a situation of having to implement Section 189, specifically in Petro SA, and also in AE, we are having those discussions. It's very unfortunate, but it is one of the areas that we have had to look at. The fourth area is really growth and acquisitions, which is really looking at how we can grow aggressively across the group so that we also enhance our commercial sustainability. And here really we're talking about projects like the Romco project and others, which I will not necessarily mention at this point. And then the fifth broad area, which is the last one, is really the merger of the three entities, the merger of Petro SA, SSF, and IGES. That is still in the pipeline. We are doing a lot of work in terms of getting that to be realized. However, again, it goes back to the sustainability and stability of Petro SA that we have to look at a package that is ensures that the Petro SA is financially stable as well. So we are busy with that as a team, and we are looking at interventions and how we can actually get that up and running so that we can move ahead with that, with the merger. So, Honorable Chair, I think at this point, let me hand over to the leader of the delegation of the executive, Dr. Mukoka, who is going to take us through the presentation. And what we will then do is they will also assist with responding to the questions. I do trust that the presentation is visible on the screen as we have just slided it. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just wanted to confirm if you can see the presentation, Chair.
No.
Let's try again, Chair. We are trying, Chair, on our side to reflight the presentation. Is it clear now, Chair? We've reflighted it.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think, Chair, in order for us to save on time, I'm going to go straight to slide 6, Chair, which just gives an overview of the SEF Group and where the SEF Group is in the energy value chain. We do play a security of we have a security of supply mandate, Chair, which spans from upstream all the way to downstream. And I think just to indicate the Chair, what this presentation is going to indicate are some of the interventions at the level of upstream, midstream, and downstream that will be engaged in to tend the tide, especially, Chair, for Petro SA, and to share some of the business development interventions in the presentation, Chair. And I think without any waste of time for this slide, Chair, I'd like to bring the committee's attention to what we consider as an emerging threat that from a security of supply standpoint that SEF needs to attend to, which relates to the dwindling local refining capacity and its implications, Chair, on the different product grades that are critical for different industries. And I can assure you, Chair, that there are certain interventions that we are taking from the standpoint of acquisition, and we'll share as the presentation continues. I would like now, Chair, to move to slide 13, Chair, so that we can save as much time as possible. Just to indicate, Chair, that at the level of upstream, there is an intervention that has been made at PetroSA that relates to partnerships, so that the different blocks that we have, Chair, can be monetized and mined. And this also relates to the different opportunities that the AE from the coal side is looking at. We are also quite active, Chair, in relation to the upstream resource development bill, in relation to the monetization of state carry and various engagements around that. As far as midstream, Chair, is concerned, and it would be also presented, there are opportunities that we are looking at that relate to the preservation of local refining capacity and how we deal with the extent to which cheap imports can just erode local industrial production within the refining space, but also the opportunities that we are unlocking from the standpoint of gas distribution infrastructure. From a downstream standpoint, what has become clear, Chair, is that there needs to be an aggressive push from the SEF group to capture that downstream market, so that we can place product that is locally refined and also imported, Chairperson, in order to generate the much needed revenues for PetroSA. I'm going to ask, Chair, that I go to slide 15 that deals really with the internal factors, the factors that really keep us awake at night, that the presentation will try and respond to in terms of the various interventions from the various subsidiaries. What we are observing from a financial sustainability standpoint as an important risk, Chair, is the single source aspect of the clients of our entities. You take AE, for instance, there needs to be diversification also in terms of who is purchasing our product. At this point, it's only Eskom. The same Chair, goes for PetroSA, SFF as well, in terms of storage. And the big one that really we are working quite hard at in terms of bringing financial sustainability relates to PetroSA. And this comes about because of the low capacity utilization, simply because the plant is not running due to feedstock challenges. The committee chair would remember that the GTL refinery ran out of locally sourced feedstock late 2020. And I think one other challenge that we have identified that needs to be dealt with, Chair, relates to the lack of synergies, and the optimization process that we've identified here is the major process, Chair, which just by increasing synergies, we can increase savings to the tune of 1.5 billion rands within 3 years, Chair. And the concerted effort also is going towards dealing with decommissioning. And as Chair has indicated of SEF, there are leadership culture challenges that we are dealing with at the moment at the various subsidiaries, PetroSA included, so that the interventions that we have in place can bring about the desired impact that are reflected in our presentation, Chair. This slide, Chair, just put to context where we think the different operations or entities are, and the types of interventions really that are required, given the challenges that we have identified. You'd see, Chair, we've indicated categorization along the stagnant, in decline and in distress, and the entities within the SERF group that we think are in those categories, and the types of interventions that will be made will be become clear as the colleagues after me present. But we see some positives from the standpoint of SERFSOC that has reached maturity, but also strong balance sheet from the standpoint of IGES and SFF. I'm going to now, Chair, hand over to Mr. Makanya to present from slide 19. Thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Makanya.
Thank you very much, Joe. Greetings, Chair, and the honourable members. Chair, I think with that understanding of the external and internal operating environment driven by, of course, the energy transition, the targets for net zero, the closing of refineries, I think, in the country, and their impact on the overall security of energy supply, the rising oil prices, their own groups' commercial sustainability challenges, issues of geopolitics, technological advancement, and the need for the SERF group to play a much more meaningful role to support government with broader national economic recovery imperatives. What then becomes the SERF group's role from a strategic response? So, Chair, we see the SERF group strategic response underpinned by nine strategic drivers. Security of energy supply, how do we continue to play a much more meaningful role to retain the local refinery capacity and ensure security of energy supply, but not only from a refinery perspective, but right across the entire energy value chain. Being alert to the energy transition and how we move quite swiftly in the adoption of cleaner energy resources, but at the same time acknowledging the current and reserves that we have with regards to fossil fuel, financial independence. The group chairperson spoke about us being a Schedule 2 entity that does not receive any funding from the state, and therefore, how do we become this commercially sustainable entity that can continue to plow back to support government's broader strategic initiatives? SNPC enablement, which is the merger of the three entities. And the CEO spoke about the value that we can realize from that. National economic development initiatives, issues of governance, the strategic partnerships. What could be the strategic role that the SERF group can play in bringing about international players into the shores of South Africa to invest in our local economy and create the much needed jobs, issues of operational excellence so that we play in a highly competitive environment. We need to be highly competitive, not only as an SOE or as the SERF Group Federation, but also to benefit the country and matters pertaining to, I think, to funding and growth and how we fund a number of these strategic initiatives, either from our own balance sheet, but also through forms of strategic partnership. Chair, those are the nine strategic drivers that underpin then our planning horizon. So then you then look at how the SERFSOC strategy or the SERF group strategy is laid out during the planning horizon. It's divided into the three horizons that the group chairperson spoke about. One being what we call the reset period, which is the current financial period, Chair, that we're in, which is really focused at resetting the group, stabilizing the group with what we call the critical five or key initiatives. It's the execution of the merger, stabilizing of operationally challenged entities, aggressively driving growth, and of course the repositioning of SERFSOC to be an integrated investment company entity, and to bring about the necessary investment into the country. And we are clear, Chair, about the desired performance during this planning period, what our desired position is as the SERF group, and what the critical enablers are for this planning period. then the next horizon is really about, now that we stabilized and we've reset, it's about scaling for growth. And there are strategic initiatives that we'll be chasing, Chairperson, honorable members. And again, we are clear about the desired outcomes and performance that we want to chase in that space and so forth. Chair, then I think at high level, if you look at them, this is really just a summary of the CEF group strategy, I think in one slide, outlining then the strategic plays. Next slide. This is, let's move to slide 23, Mr. Mashapo. Okay. So, Chair, this really just a summary of the CEF group scorecard, outlining the key, the KPIs and the targets for this planning period under the consolidation and turnaround. So there are certain key results that we are chasing, and we are clear about the targets. And this is part of the CEF group methodology known as OKR, objectives and key results. So under each strategic theme, we are clear about the key results as well as the target. Next slide, Ms. Mashapu. And I think it's the same here, but maybe I think a focus, Chair, maybe just to go back on the previous slide, Ms. Mashapu, is really what the group CEO spoke about, the strategy and long-term growth. This is what we call our license to operate. We must be commercially viable, commercially strong, so that we can be able to execute on other developmental initiatives. Next slide, Ms. Mashapu. And I think this is just the last one then, Chair, under the operational excellence. And really here, it's more about how we automate, how we become much more agile and nimble in order to be able to support the broader strategic initiatives, and how we become much more effective. Slide 26 is just a summary, Chair, of the group initiatives throughout the planning horizon. Through you, Chair, I will now hand over to Mr. Mwahi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and honorable members, chairs and colleagues on the line. Chair, basically the next few slides will just deal with individual subsidiary roles and actually what we're looking at. And the slide on the board, Chair, is to do with CEF as a holding company. The theme of commercial sustainability comes through, and you'll see that theme coming through all the subsidiaries, Chair. The other issue, Chair, in terms of strategic objective is to look at consolidation and turnaround. As colleagues have said, we've got some financial challenges, and we need to consolidate, make sure that there are no overlaps, and be able to turn the group around, Chair. And the last one is short-term and long-term growth, and those are all under revenue generation businesses, Chair. And we've got a strategic place underneath that underpins that. And in the interest of time, I will not go through all those there, Chair. On the right, we basically have got the support in terms of operational excellence, human performance, and more importantly, Chair, corporate governance and risk management enterprise. I mean, the honorable members will remember that we had a lot of lapses in terms of corporate governance, and CEF is actually focusing a lot to make sure that we make sure that all those are managed. We're going to be looking at organizational strategy, Chair, and in terms of that, there are three themes coming through, which is energy investor, strategic oversight and subsidiary management, and that's actually still talking to making sure that there are no governance lapses like we had in the past, and basically continue to play a developmental role in supporting the government. Apologies, Chair. Okay, thank you, Chair. Chair, in terms of AE, basically a few things that I just want to lift from AE, Chair. One challenge that we realize with African exploration is one company, one mine, one customer,
and one product. And actually, we realized that that's a huge risk, and we decided to look at diversification. And while we diversify, we'll look at strategic partnership and acquisition to make sure that you get to generating revenue pretty quickly, Chair. In terms of IGES, Chair, the IGES, we know that it has been also one pipeline and revenue generator. And we're also looking at, just in terms of strategic plays, we want to expand our and manage our gas transmission investment. We also want to trade gas coming out of Mozambique to generate revenue out of that. And the last but one, Chair, the most important one is to deal with acquisition of distribution infrastructure, Chair. Actually, we say we want to build the highways and allow more suppliers to come on board to be able to secure security of supply. PASA, Chair, continue to do what we have been doing, but the critical role is to make sure that we attract investment into the country, especially in the upstream, and we also expand continental shelf claim. But we want to shift, Chair, instead of just being one of those countries busy with exploration, we need to shift to production, Chair. And the last one, Chair, is SFF, continue to be focusing on diversifying infrastructure and acquiring new infrastructure, especially around finished products, because our market has changed. We actually need more finished product infrastructure in terms of our security of supply. And SFF will continue to focus on that, Chair. Chair, with that, I thank you. We decided actually that PetroSA will need special focus, and I'll ask the acting CEO of PetroSA to deal with the next phase. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and greetings to you and protocol observed. I think earlier in the presentation, my colleagues articulated the problem statement and the challenge, the financial challenge that PetroSA finds itself in. And what we found is the financial crisis has led to numerous unintended consequences, which indeed do keep us up at night. So what I want to highlight for this slide are some of these key interventions that we are propelling to ensure that we do stabilize the organization. I must highlight that one of the critical enablers that we had found urgent to implement included the establishment and operation of the tripart war room led through the DMRE, CEF, as well as PetroSA, seeking to assist in developing and integrating plausible stabilization initiatives, as outlined in this slide. I think if I were just to highlight what these are really seeking to close in terms of what the current status is and what the desired end state is really talking to how we're able to increase and improve sales while reducing the costs of sales. This includes leveraging our existing stake in the through the Ghana assets, as well as, of course, some of the accelerated opportunities around state-owned entity collaboration. I think it's also important that we are advancing feedstock solutions to enable the improved plant of utilization of 3x3. And one of these critical aspects is the engagement that we're advancing with Total that are really seeking to secure the indigenous gas to feed this plant. Critical in the short term is to drive market expansion through the aggressive growth of our downstream business that is trading solutions and logistics. And one of the areas that we've seen as critical is within the group as well as above the state entities to leverage infrastructure access while we utilize the financial instruments available within ourselves as we increase margins through imports. And of course, this is also talking to how we'd be looking to enhance our own human capital as well as organizational alignment. What I think is quite important to indicate is, notwithstanding these interventions, that the outlook for the next 3 years remains challenging. However, efforts will continue and continue to be driven on the GTL refinery optimization and feedstock securing. Thank you very much. I will hand over to the Group CFO, Ms. Murabi.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm going to present the financial plan that underpins our corporate strategy on our financial performance. It's important to highlight that we'll be embarking on an investment drive over the planning period to enhance our revenue streams, and we'll also implement some strategies to turn around PetroSA. PetroSA takes up 95% of the group's business, and therefore we needed to focus there to make sure that we rectify the financial sustainability challenge that we have. On this slide, on the first 2 years of the planning period, we'll be starting to implement our growth initiatives, and therefore we anticipate to generate some net losses of an average of 436 for each year on average. And in the 2 outer years, we then anticipate to generate net profits of 1.3 billion per annum on average. And this is mainly due to the gross profits that we're going to generate, mainly coming from PetroSA, as PetroSA will be increasing their finished product volumes, and also the Romco transaction. We are just about to finalize it, and we're going to get dividends from the additional 15% of the Romco shareholding. And you will realize that we'll generate benefits from of additional dividends from the first year of the planning period, whereas on other initiatives, the benefits will be generated in the 2 outer years. And on this slide, Chairperson, our cash is going to increase by 1.36 billion from the base year to the outer year of the financial year. And you'll note, due to the mainly the 40% Romco shares that we are going to get over the planning period. And you will note that we'll invest in different assets across the group. And then we anticipate also to fund our investments from loans, equity, and partnership. In the first year of the planning period, you'll note a jump on external loans there of 3.6 billion. The 3.1 billion is for it's the capital that we are going to raise for Romco asset. And on the financial position, important to note that the group will remain solvent over the planning period with the net asset value of 9.4 billion. And our assets are anticipated to increase from 29 billion to 33 billion in the outer year. And the main contributor there is that 40% shares Romco dividends. And our liabilities are also going to increase to 3.3 billion in the first planning year. And this is mainly due to the loan that we would raise for Romco.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I think because of time, Chair, I'm going to go to the concluding remarks slide, just to indicate, Chair, that the focus has been really on the 5 main points that relates to consolidation and turnaround, commercial sustainability and long-term strategy, amongst other factors, including human performance and operational excellence. Those are the main pillars, strategic themes, Chair, that have are anchoring the strategy of the Central Energy Fund to really turn the tide, as indicated by the CFO. And I think part of what becomes important for us going forward is the growth agenda that is underpinned by strategic partnerships and acquisitions. And I chair here, we are going for off-balance sheet acquisitions and on-balance sheet acquisitions, partnerships that allow us to place our products in the market. And as indicated, the measure becomes quite an important instrument of really optimizing the way in which our assets and rights can interact at the level of IGAS, SFF, and Petro SA, which then means that the SEFSOC will need to be repositioned as a strategic investor and a strategic parent in relation to seeing through the measure, but also investing in those critical areas that are important for security of supply. And of course, what will remain critical are the interventions that we'll continue to make at the Petro SA to stabilize Petro SA, Chair, and really get to the bottom of the malfeasance and poor performance. As indicated in the Chair's introduction, the intensification of the actions that have already been taken, Chair, so that we can drive a high-performance organization that delivers on the security of supply. I would humbly, Chair, pause there and hand it back to our chairperson, Chair. Thank you. I'll hand it over to you again, Chair. Thank you.
The power of me selling Bitcoin as usual. Thank you very much, Seth. I wanted to do it this way. Can we get questions of clarity on SEF? I'm just looking at the time. That's why I decided to go for questions of clarity on SEF. Then when we come back, we deal with SADPMR and then SDG. I see only the hand of Honorable Mylan. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Malinga. It seems those are the people. Honorable Malinga, then Honorable Mylan, then you keep Honorable Malinga.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you very much for the presentation. I do want to just raise like a cautionary hand, if you will. We've seen these presentations for the last couple of years about SEF Group's turnaround, and unfortunately we're still in a state where the financial situation is at best iffy, I guess. You've got negative revenue. Well, you've got basically a loss. You are projecting 3 to 5 years out that you'll be making profits and that you will have a net surplus. But we've seen these presentations before and they have come of naught. So I want to raise a caution and say that while we need to do everything we can to turn these entities around, at some point we are going to have to take a decision and say it's no longer worth it to keep throwing good money after bad. And so I do want to urge the SEF board and the subsidiary boards to ensure that these plans come to fruition now. That said, Chair, I think that there are some good initiatives here. I'm very pleased to see that the disposal of non-core assets at Petro SA has taken place. Chair, when we were in Mossel Bay a couple of weeks ago, we heard from Petro SA that they were looking at either refurbishing or essentially replacing their entire plant at that facility, and in order to make it meet current standards and meet the demand for what they need to do. And then when we were in Nexa, there was some discussion at Pelindaba Enterprises about the resources that they have available for precision manufacturing. And I think there's an opportunity here for two state-owned companies to synergize and utilize each other's needs and requirements in order to optimize their cash flows. So I would urge PetroSA and CEF Group to look at other entities within the Department of Energy and see if there are resources there that they can utilize to assist them in achieving their goals. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings again to yourself and everybody on the platform. Chairperson, let me also welcome the presentation by the CEF Group and zoom straight to the comments made by the Chair of CEF in terms of the merger. Chairperson, the last time they came before the Portfolio Committee on the merger of Petro SA, SFF and IGAS, there were timelines. I just want to check, Chair, how far are they with those timelines and how soon can we see the merger being concluded, Chair? She also made mention of three entities, if I heard you correctly, three entities that were not or which did not receive grants. Which are those
Is it me who disappeared, or we have lost Honorable Malinga?
Which entities?
Yes, which are the entities?
If I had the chairperson of the CEF board correctly, she said that there were three entities that did not receive grants. Which are those entities, Chair, and what was the reason that they were not given transfers? Chairperson, also, I think if it's Mr. Mavuso who made mention that the balance sheet from SFF and IGAS, they look very strong. I am worried, Chair, that you will merge two entities that have two balance sheet that look strong with Petro SA, that is their finances are neither here nor there. How do they intend to make this a workable, Chair? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Malinga. I'm sure, Chair, you will quickly round up in terms of the responses. The only thing I must say, I don't want to say whether I must fear, whether I must be happy, I don't know, please. It's shocking, some of the things. It would have been nice, Chair, because you know, when you come here, sometimes you get hammered. It would be nice to get this particular update and it be in a more recorded, recorded information. Obviously, we have to give you space to deal and interact with those issues. But the question would be, these things that you are raising, for how long have they been happening? And that's why I'm saying, I'm not sure, indeed, I'm just mild. It's good news, but at the same time, I would say that's what leadership should do. And I think this is what some of us have been calling for. I'm not saying there's someone who's guilty, but when there is a suspicion of certain underhand things that are happening, leadership must rise and act. Now, I'm saying the only thing we would know if it happened to be true, please let it not disappear. Some people must take the consequences of that, and it would mean it's not something that is new. The point I'm trying to say is that for now, I would say for the first time in any entity, I get someone who says we picked up this is how we have acted, and these are the things that have been happening, stripping off of equipment, disappearing of these unholy alliances in terms of accessing what is accrued of benefit, whether fuel or what. I'm just saying the way though you put it, it was more like it's just those opening remarks. I want you to give us assurance. Let's sit at this committee and say, now there, anyway, they say it takes a woman to determine the outcomes. When everybody is defeated, it will then say, give it to women and they can do it. Now, I'm happy that at least as you are, I'm not sure, I might be alone, but I'm a little bit, even if I was a little bit dizzy or drowsy, I became much more, I would say, there is someone giving us, maybe there is something that will come out of this. I just wanted to say that it was just my observation. Can I get your response, Chair, and your team, or otherwise it's just my comment on this one that I'm talking about.
Thank you very much, Chair, for that summary at the end and the input. And also thanks for to the members for the questions. I think what I would say really just from my side is that from all the board's point of view, we'll make sure that oversight is strengthened and that there is leadership stability, consequence management is taken. And I think more so on the fact that the Honorable Milam's point that you've been seeing these presentations for quite a while now and you actually want to see some delivery. I think from the board, that is the role that you're going to play, and we're going to make sure that we get management to account and we also have stability at that level. I think I'm also just going to deal with one more and then ask the executive to assist. The funding or who actually in the group gets the grants, it's only PASA that gets grants from government. Otherwise, the other entities actually are self-funded, so they have to generate their own income and make sure that they're efficient in running their operations. So it's just only PASA who actually is who gets the grants from the government. So I'm going to ask that Dr. Mokoka deals with the merger issues that were raised, and then also for Ms. Nemane to deal with the refurbishment of Petro SA, or what is the status, and then maybe the balance sheet. I don't know if Mr. Mwahi want to deal with the balance sheet of IGES and SFF that they are strong. Dr. Mokoka.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think my response will go to Honorable Malinga's question in relation to the merger, where it is, Chair. We went to Cabinet Committee to present the merger and the merger archetype, and the response that we got last year was that go and seek a second opinion on the legal and the financial aspects of the merger archetype that you are proposing. We went and did that, Chair, and we received a thumbs up from the legal second opinion and the financial second opinion, Chair. What is now left is to go to the to cabinet seating in order to table the matter at the cabinet, but we did get an approval at the level of the cabinet committee chair. And I think the merger archetype is sensitive, Chair, to the special legal status of SFF and the commercial challenges that we have to ring fence at Petro SA. I'll now, Chair, call on Ms. Nemane to deal with the questions that relate to Petro SA. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think mine will be quite brief to thank and acknowledge the comments made by the honourable members on the aspect around Petro SA. And I think as we pursue the interventions around strategic partnerships relating to securing feedstock in a competitive manner and addressing the refurbishment of the plant to ensure that we're in state utilization optimally, we will also be leveraging the partnerships as guided within the ecosystem of the state entities to ensure that we do indeed realize the overarching benefit of the resources that are available in the country. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, the question from Honorable Malinga regarding the balance sheet of FIGS, SFF, and PetroSA. Honorable Malinga, we very much awake to the fact that we should not do the merger at the expense of collapsing the balance sheet of those two companies. We are working very hard to make sure that we at least get PetroSA to the manageable stage so that when we do the merger, PetroSA can actually not collapse those two companies. Actually, since this morning, we've been locked in the room as executives going through what should we be doing with PetroSA. So I can give the assurance that we are working hard to make sure that that does not happen. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think we believe that we've addressed the questions asked by the honorable members. Chair, thank you very much. We'll hand it back to you.
Done, Chair.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think from our side, we've responded to all the questions that were posed to us. So I think we will be guided by you, Chair, whether this is it in terms of the contributions. Thank you.
I can't see any other hand except assuming it's the old hand of Honorable Malinga that has not been. Look, Honorable Members, the issue is that the issue of the measure, I didn't want to enter it. It's part of our program. It is scheduled as per the promise. We tried to shift it to be as far back as possible. We hope you would have had the opportunity to then have engaged the executives, in particular the cabinet. But let me leave it at this stage, at that point. I'm sure based on whether you would have made a request or no request in terms of your state of readiness, we'll make that consideration at that point with regards to the measures and also the implications thereof. At this stage, Chair, of staff, thank you very much with your team. Like I said, at least there's something for me that is telling us that there is some degree of determination to turn things around. And I must give you, even before we finish here, I must give you the assurance that all the necessary and required support you will get from this committee, as long as you are doing something that anyway the committee has been asking and begging, not only you, many of other entities. And we will look forward to that. Maybe it would be a good measure even for future reference. On that note, Honorable Members, with all of the presentation that have been made, we are going to take a break. Fortunately, no one is going to ask for something from anyone. If you don't have something to eat, you can just sit and take a nap and wake up at 2 o'clock when we come for the SADPMR and the SDT. And then we will then take questions after that. The time now is 12:59. Let's be back at 13:59, and then we are commencing at 14:00. Thank you very much. The meeting is on a break for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.